I'd like to call this meeting to order. Requirements of the Open Public Meeting Law, PL 1975, Chapter 231, have been satisfied that adequate notice of this meeting has been published in the Star Gazette and posted on the bulletin board at Borough Hall stating the time, place, and purpose as required by law. Would you all please rise and join me in saluting our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have a roll call, please?
Here.
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 Okay, first up, we have a council appearance by our recreation director and the committee, Mr. Fitzgerald. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mayor. First time up, and I'm going to try and make it regular so that we do it. The intent is to address the pool and the completion of the pool season and come back to you at some time later, probably in a month or two, with the rest of the recreation department and recommendations for changes in fees and funding and adjustments that we've observed over the years. So we will, talk about the pool situation and where we are at this point. I have copies of a breakout that does a comparative for the sad and unhappy side of the whole thing is that the pool lost $48,000. This does some grouping of the losses and the expenses over the period of 3 years and does a comparative of those numbers in lump numbers without getting down to individual detail numbers, which we do have, and we can get into if we need to, or if there's questions I can't answer, I'll certainly take them and answer them and get back to you with whatever those issues are. The principal issue that we're talking about is that the $48,000 is primarily offset by the red line on the sheet, and that's what it is, the red money. The extraordinary repairs to the pool and to the, lump those into categories so that we know kind of what they are in terms of. Most of it turned out to be pumps. When I came here, I knew that you had a big problem with the main pump. That pump in the pool wasn't working from last year, and you opened 3 weeks late and lost revenue and lost assurances of a lot of people over the fact that would the pool open this year. With that, we proceeded. The pump was arrived, it was installed. Right after I got here, and the first thing was the circuit breaker didn't work, and that was something we had to search around for, and that's when the volunteers turned up, when John Dorsch and Kevin and John Bird and your town manager and just a host of people jumped in to join in all the problems as they arrived. At one point, it felt like a commander of one of those convoys going to England during the Second World War. And turned around and all of a sudden, whoops, there goes another ship. Well, that's what was happening to the pumps. The pump category alone was a number that dropped the pump number alone was $20,000 from that main pump till the first week the pool was going and the circulating pump went. And after that it was the one of the chlorinating pumps, then it was the other chlorinating pump, and then it was the two different sump pumps. The way a pool works is it gets its water from that deep well pump, that expensive one. The next thing it does is another pump that pumps the water back and around in the pool and sanitizes it. The next thing is there are chlorinating pumps that add the chlorine directly to the water to maintain the sanitation level. And then there are two sump pumps that filter the tank and the outside of the tank. All of those were a problem. All of those had been, had limited maintenance. Let's put it that way. It should not have been a situation where this kind of thing should happen all in a single year. But it did. The bathrooms themselves, there were three appliances, three urinals and a toilet that were broken when I got here. There were several letters that went bad. There were repairs. There were two different instances where we had to call in the plumber to stop water instantly because a faucet came off and the water was blurting out of the wall. There's no way to turn off the water in that building other than turn off the whole building. Those total numbers added up to $8,000. When we first started out, we also had to talk about reassuring the people of the borough that the pool would open. We had to get out there and tell people that we were going to open and we were going to do what we did before. So if we look at these numbers and take the primary number, in my opinion, is the top one, and we're talking about total revenue. We were able to bring the revenue back this year to what it was 2 years ago, the year before you had the behavior at the pool. I think that's probably the biggest measure there is of this whole thing. Could we bring a bad business model back to the reassurances of people? I think we did that. The rest of the numbers are hard, cold numbers. There they are. If anybody needs any further information on that, certainly I'll take your questions. If I can't answer them, I'll get back to you with the numbers that you need to do that. Bob?
Just comparing the 3 years, what are the membership numbers, family members, did they go up this year at all?
The numbers this year in total membership were just about the same as they were in 2009.
So they were?
Yes. The numbers for membership, the numbers for total revenue were up. The snack bar more than doubled in revenue. The money is all spread all over different things, and I don't remember all of those in broken individual categories, but the gross number ended up being the same as it was 2 years ago.
And then if you extend down, I noticed that you excluded the salaries and the loan on the bottom. Now, if you included those in and extended that further down, what is like the bottom line? Do you have any idea, or would we have
well,
to...
Well, if you were to take the $48,000 in total losses and take the... contributions from the borough for salaries, you'd add those two together.
Yeah.
And then you'd have a number that was less than it was over the last 2 years.
Well, would it still be less because the salaries, I'm sure, are up? So that's what I'm saying. If this was extended down,
you're asking what would the final number be if you included the salary?
I'd like to find longer, but the reason I'm asking is because I want to just see the difference between 2009 and 2011, considering that last year was...
If you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th line down, contribution from borough, S&W and O&E,
mm-hmm.
in 2011, mm-hmm. the borough contributed $40,000 to recreation.
Okay.
In 2010, they contributed $125 and change, and in 2009, they contributed $199 and change.
I see that. Okay.
So as you can see, the revenue was at what it was 2 years ago with 80% less funding from the bar.
Okay. And so those are the two salary figures in that. That's in the contributions. And then the Green Acres loan was still not...
Well, Green Acres loan, if you look on the fourth line down, grand total excluding Green Acres loan, because you have to pay that loan regardless.
Right.
The loan is $20,442.72. So that loan has to be paid regardless.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other? Mr. Joel?
The pumps are replaced. I know you mentioned the main pump out. It's done a while. They're brand new. The circulating pump, that's been told replacement, that's brand new as well.
That's brand new as well.
And what about the chlorinator pumps? They're also brand new.
Brand
new. Now, in your opinion, do you think that that's all done now? Is there a way to winterize that system properly now that we won't have any future problems?
Yes. Your answer to your question is yes. But the problems weren't winterizing.
Right.
The chlorinated pump was sitting in water.
Okay.
The engineer's report says the pump wasn't even repairable.
Yeah.
Because it's in water.
Those motors.
They're gone.
Yeah, right.
The two sump pumps, one of the sump pumps was sitting in a hose, in a pipe that was cut off. It sat in chlorinated water. Will one of those pumps fail again next year?
Hopefully not. They're taken care of properly.
They're taken care of properly.
Are they removed, or you keep them in place, or I'm not familiar with where you actually place them.
I understand that. I'd love you to come down and spend the day, spend some time, spend an hour with me. I'll show
you.
Circulating pump is something that they use a triangular hoist to lift it out of a pit that's 12 feet in the pump.
Yeah, that's like a wall pump, basically.
Well pump, yeah, exactly. So that's not going to come out, but that will be winterized.
Right.
We have somebody come in, run all the water backwards, strip all the water out of it,
right.
Force pressure it, and seal it off so that there is no water or water residual in the water.
Okay.
The chlorinated pumps are little things that look like that. They look like a cat, about the size and shape of a cat. The little boom heads that move on them that regulate from a controller that operates the amount of chlorine that's fed.
Yeah.
They're not maintained. Soups go bad. Water gets into the motor itself instead of just being chlorine because it leaks. Pump goes bad. Should have been maintained differently.
Right.
The circulating pump should have been maintained differently. The two sump pumps that are rusted out should have been maintained differently.
And sump pumps, are they like a submersible pump, like someone having their basement for a similar to that?
Exactly. There's two of them. There's one that sits in a tank
that's
a 6x6x12. That's the filter tank.
Okay.
And then there's a surrounding tank that keeps it dry around it so you can get to it.
So they could probably be rinsed and placed somewhere in a dry area so they won't pull that again.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure what you thought about as far as the main pump. I figured with the well pump, and nearly that well pump, I have done that before, and they could be pretty deep. How deep is your well?
The well's 218 feet.
Wow.
It's up in the bathhouse.
Yeah.
And they had to put the new one in through the roof. There's a trap door in the ceiling.
Okay.
You drop it down through the floor, 218 feet in the ground, plug it in, boom, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
The big circuit breaker on the wall is fried from last year. Another $218,
yeah.
I think it was, it's on there.
Okay.
That's where we are.
Okay. All right.
Today, we're over that.
Okay. So hopefully,
now we move ahead.
Providing next year,
the good Lord will. That's where we are.
And winterized properly.
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask this too. But is there warranty on the main pump? Because that was the big expensive one. And what is that warranty? How long is that covered for?
I have to look. I don't know.
10 years or? You know?
I haven't seen a well pump like that go in less than 20 years.
But they last quite a while, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say you're about right.
As long as it's not a reoccurring effect,
Well, the one that was there was original.
Was it?
So, yeah. So that's, 30, 40 years old.
As you and I talked about, I've operated as chairman in Belvedere for those 5 years and on the council for 3 years before that. And the two, we have parallel pumps over there.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them haven't been touched in that period of time. A long time ago, I was involved in a pool in Mohawk.
And then you said that there was some, I guess, I don't want to use the word neglect, but, okay, so some maintenance was not performed.
There certainly is a reason for that.
Do we know?
I would rather we look ahead.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing now. I'm saying, do we know what the maintenance requirements are, and you have like a maintenance schedule worked out for that?
Not only a maintenance schedule, but the creation of files that keep record of that kind of thing. You can go downstairs now and ask me for any one of the six pumps I talked about, and you want the chlorine pump made by Stenner. You go to chlorine, you pull it out. Here's the Stenner pump, here's the serial number, here's the uses to use it, here's the replacement tubes for it, here's who you talk to, this is what you get, this is how you fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it should be.
And the maintenance is included as well.
Like you mentioned, that's one way to keep the filing. Organization is a key success. That's definitely the route to take the file.
Mr. Boyle?
Yeah, I like your comment, your outlook going forward. I like that positive outlook because 2011, with these numbers here, was a strong year. And you did more with less, just looking at these numbers. So that red line there, we can see a dramatic drop going forward, and your top line is going to go up. So I have to say, with this report here, this is very encouraging. So you and your crew and the committee and all that, I have to say, did a very nice job in 2011. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I have to credit, there were a lot of volunteers. The day that circular pump went, I had five guys there, including your manager, but also John Dorsch and three of the DPW guys and Kevin from the sewer, all with trying to solve the problems that were there that What happens? Here we are, we just opened for a weekend, I can't circulate the water. So we put a trash pump on the side of the pool, and put both ends of it in the pool. We created a circulating pump out of the trash pump. We kept open. That was your big problem. You had to succeed this year.
And going forward, you think we're going to be in better shape for next year?
Definitely.
Okay.
We increased the numbers in the snack bar. That's certainly going to be a prime item that we'll be talking about. And I think I've just addressed it probably to all of you at some point, that snack bar is a moneymaker. It needs to be expanded. There needs to be some work done on that. There's a lot of revenue issues that need to be changed. Some of your rates are too low. The differential rates between different towns should be adjusted. That's all the package we'll do at the end of the year report on the program. Hopefully you'll accept that kind of thing as another revenue increase so that it can go forward so that it can pay for itself. It's that simple.
Yeah, I also had two mothers stop me about 2 weeks ago saying, what pleasure it was to use the bathrooms there now. Because I was there volunteering when you guys were working out, and I saw what you were doing. And they just said, boy, it was so nice to go there and use the facilities, that they were fantastic.
When you're talking about women in the bathroom, it's got to be more shiny.
That was the first thing they said to me of anything. It was like, those bathrooms are great.
It has to be clean, shiny, and have toilet paper.
That's
all about.
The rest of the rec programs, have you done any final numbers on them to see how successful?
I don't have final numbers. We certainly worked through the numbers. And for the most part, they'll be okay or self-sustaining. We do have a couple of issues, and I know we've talked about it briefly, about the property maintenance and the light situation and those other things that we don't have really resolved yet, but we will before the season's out, so they can address them and how they apply to each program individually.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else? Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Next up, we have the minutes of our regular meeting of August 16th and September 6th, and the executive session of August 16th. Thank you. Any discussion on any of these minutes?
Yeah, I have a few questions. August 16th,
the regular minutes.
Yes, regular minutes. But as far as the streets can be, I also attended the three home meetings with Deputy Mayor Boyle on August 10th.
What page is that, sir?
That was, there's a section back here, Mr. Boyle, committee. Did you get a report on that?
Yes.
And, yeah, just to give Dad my name in there, if I didn't send that email.
Okay.
And on the regular meeting of September 6th, I did, with the council appearance of Chief McDonald, I did ask about what the dedication or the number of officers to dedicate to the borough was, and if they had any kind of districting, if they did have any. I believe you did answer that question, just to add that into my remarks as far as my question. And that, I believe, was it.
Okay.
I had one on page 2 with the discussion on the correspondence for the best practice checklist. Page 2, August 16th.
Thank you.
I had requested that the policy committee review and research the various policies. I mentioned 3, if they could look into them. The formal process for the legal counsel to sign off on major professional service contracts. I request that they review that one or create one. The absence from meetings policy, and there was one other one that I asked them to review. Well, anyway, you can just say that I requested that.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Correspondence.
A motion to receive and file.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on these? We need to discuss the second one, I guess, or at least the second one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one.
Okay, well, let's just move to go for the receive and file, and then we can discuss them. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Let's deal with the Belvedere Avenue one first. I believe you wanted to speak on that, Mr. Boyle?
I sent everybody an email. I had a conversation with the county engineer, and as Justin alluded to, when we left that meeting, we were not under the impression that we had to physically improve that road before they would consider it. County engineer, and I asked him that again, he said, no, you have to physically improve that road before we consider it. So I don't know if we're prepared to even, you know, talk about the road improvements, which we will have to, and decide which road that we need to really get going on, you know, go through that work, and still not have that accepted. It's kind of like in purgatory.
Well, they would be talking about those improvements being north of Carlton Avenue in particular?
Yeah, the Belvedere Avenue. Repaving, curbing, parking one side.
I think the ADA crossing is doing a bit of something with that. There's a height of the curb of the street as far as wheelchair access, I guess. They already did through that, or whether it's still acceptable. They did do it right currently? I don't know.
So if, with this particular memo that we received, you know, I would not be prepared to go through these costs just for this particular endeavor with assuming that county's going to be taken over. I was led to believe that we did the studies, we saw what needed to be done, we forwarded back to the county for their cost analysis, and then they would go forward maybe with taking that road over. And that's not the way it seems to be.
So now we're looking at repaving a significant
portion
of the...
If we're still going that route,
yeah.
You know, and that's, I believe that could be the county's wishes.
So would it be the Streets Committee recommendation to table this for the time being?
Oh, absolutely, because this is more than I really thought we were prepared to do.
Okay.
Do you agree?
I agree. I was under the impression that they were going to do the improvements, why not?
Yeah.
Do a study, and I get a look at that, and that was pretty much it.
Okay. Any other comments on that? We all agree that we'll table this until such time as we are able to pave. Okay, anything else on that before we move on? Okay, for the tax assessor vacancy, as we all know, Tom has passed quite unexpectedly, which puts us in a bit of a bad position. It is a council appointment, the tax assessor. When we did, when we appointed Tom, we had a subcommittee that interviewed candidates and appointed at that point. We could do it that way, or we could just solicit resumes, have the manager sort through them and give us a number of qualified candidates, and then have a subcommittee go through it, as opposed to the subcommittee going through all resumes.
Mayor, is there anybody filling that temporarily?
It's a vacant position right now.
Yeah, not officially.
Not officially.
We've had somebody tell us that they would be happy to help us out in an emergency should we absolutely need a tax assessor for something. We don't do it on a per diem type of basis.
I briefly had, by the way, I'm sorry, I had a brief discussion with the tax collector who said it's urgent that we get an assessor right away. I mean, really, we can't, like, delay at all. So
what would we like to do? Obviously, we have to solicit for resumes.
Yeah, I'm for number two, you know, let the manager read through some of the resumes and then...
Yeah, I support that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we should probably have a motion to that.
I'll second.
Okay, any other discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Subcommittee then, I guess.
I was just going to say, if I may, solicit resumes, read through them, provide them to the subcommittee, and the subcommittee will then make
we'll interview.
Okay.
And don't give the subcommittee 25
no,
resumes, I guess.
Understand.
Well, I thought you were going to, in number two, that you would recommend an appointment. You'll also recommend, of those resumes you give the subcommittee, will you make a recommendation?
Well, yes, I'll give my recommendation, but ultimately, obviously, the...
But you'll give us a little selection as well, so...
What's the time frame we're looking on at?
As soon as possible. I mean, I could solicit... I mean, there's actually been a lot of exposure. Tom was a very, very well-liked and respected assessor. And he's had a lot of colleagues reach out to me and saying, hey, you know what, for Tom, I'll step up and help. If the position becomes available, I'll be more than willing to interview. So there's been a lot of interest already. I mean, if I push it hard enough, I can have a resolution on the next meeting for appointment.
Okay.
But I don't know how that's going to work with the subcommittee in time. We have 2 weeks for the next meeting. So, I mean, I can get my recommendation in a week, but then you have agenda deadlines and cutoffs. If council wants to create a subcommittee for interview purposes, I can't have it by October 4th.
We don't have a subcommittee for this practice, Jim.
There's
We're volunteering tonight, is that what we're doing?
After he's done, yeah, where are we going next? There's two choices. Like I said, I mean, council can accept my recommendation to make an appointment on the 4th. If they want to create a subcommittee, it'll probably push it back to the 20th of October. What I'm concerned about is getting our added omitted in on time. I've made arrangements with one of Tom's colleagues who's going to step up and at least help us get our added omitted in prior to the deadline so we don't get any loss on that, on the tax rolls. But of course, you know, there's always tax appeals, tax court, general assessment stuff going on at any given time. So the position needs to be filled sooner rather than later.
I'm in favor of the subcommittee.
I am too, but I got a question, a legal question kind of. Is there any way that we can have like an emergency just session just to deal with this one thing like next week and then...
As long as you advertise it, you can have a meeting.
Right, so right after the subcommittee meets, maybe we can schedule that somehow.
Do you want to do it that way? Or just have full council maybe do the interview? You know,
well, we could do that too, but...
Full council. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep it simple. I think that would probably... Mm-hmm. Like we do a budget meeting.
Let's do the full council.
That's probably a good idea.
Okay, so have Mr. Phelan go through resumes, give us three candidates, interview them one night,
mm-hmm.
and work from there.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Higgins.
Five.
What night are you?
Five resumes.
Okay. Or five candidates.
Yeah.
Okay. With the resume.
What night?
That's a good question.
How is this going to get advertised, and what time frame do we have it advertised?
Well, I can get it advertised in a day or two, and the league
meeting
is out.
48 hours prior to the meeting.
Well, I'm sorry, are you talking about the meeting or the advertising for the position?
For the position.
Position a day or two. That's the easy part. Probably immediately the league municipalities, tax collectors, assessors associations, purchasing associations. Like I said, several people have already reached out to me interested in the position. I mean, getting resumes is the easy part. Getting it done in a timely manner so we don't have an adverse effect on operations is extremely difficult.
Is there a requirement for a certain amount of time? You know, like we advertise tomorrow and we advertise for 10 days?
Not like a bidding.
No.
Theoretically, if you wanted and you knew a tax assessor and you all agreed that the tax assessor was the right person, call it tonight on 10 minutes notice. You know, you can't discriminate, you can't have any conduct that would exclude people who are in protected classes, but there's no specific requirement for advertising for a set period of time, the way you would have for bids and things of that nature.
Can I ask you a question while we're on this subject? How long after they're hired do they get tenure?
4 years.
4 years.
And just one other little factor to bring up to you, which is in the statute, but I didn't realize it until I looked at this. Let me just read the statute. 489-149. Tax assessor appointment by governor in certain cases. In a municipality wherein there shall be the office of tax assessor, and no qualified person shall be in such office on the first day of October to perform such duties or do the tax assessor or the tax assessor holding such office shall neglect or fail to assess the taxes as required by law. The governor shall cause notice to be given to the mayor or other chief executive officer of the governing body that within 10 days after service of said notice, he will appoint the tax assessor. At the expiration of 10 days, if the governor shall be satisfied that said vacancies do exist or the tax assessments were not made, the governor shall appoint and commission an assessor to perform the duties of such office. Such appointment shall receive the compensation provided by law for such tax assessor. Now, the reason for this and the critical nature of this, I think what the manager is saying is, this time of year is when all of the tax work is done and then submitted to the county, and the lists are done in connection with it, and so it's a really, unfortunately, the loss of Tom was a terrible tragedy, just from a, you know, from a personal and also professional standpoint, but secondly, the timing was terrible. You know, because this is a vital time for the tax assessor. So that, I think, is why this particular deadline exists there because of the critical nature of this.
I have a question. It doesn't say a permanent tax assessor in there. It says a tax assessor, correct? Can we appoint somebody temporarily? It doesn't say that.
It's a four-year appointment, Dave.
Wait a second. Wait a minute. Can we get, listen, it says in there that if there's not a tax assessor on August 1st, it doesn't say a tax assessor with tenure. It just says if there's not a tax assessor.
Well, yeah.
Temporarily appoint somebody, can we give somebody a contract temporarily for 60 days?
Well, let me
that's
suggest.
Like I preclude the governor, though.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Well, let me suggest this. Just, I assume you're going to ask that question. And there's nothing in the statute that I see that talks about a temporary appointment of a tax assessor. Okay. Now, could you do it, and the tax assessor agrees, says, yeah, I'll do it for 60 days. I can't do it for more than 60 days. I've got other things. I'm not going to do it. Here's a letter, and here's an agreement. Okay? The answer is yes, but since there is no specific statute that I'm finding right now, looking at the statute, right, if there's no statutory basis for a temporary appointment, you face the risk when you do that, but the person changes his mind and says, no, I'm sorry, it's a permanent appointment, there is no temporary appointment.
Going into a vote, that is a temporary appointment. A temporary appointment. Yeah, and you said the statute doesn't cover anything. We can be groundbreaking here.
You don't want to be groundbreaking.
We can be groundbreaking. Listen.
You'd make a lot of money, right?
There are requirements to say that we have, in our form of government, we have to have a manager, correct? We have a temporary manager, as long as we have a manager, correct?
You could appoint a temporary member.
Okay, well, that says that we have to have a tax assessor. It doesn't say that we need to have a tenured full-time employee tax assessor. It just says if there's not one in place in October. Now, we talk about shared services. Why can't we go to a neighboring community that has a tax assessor and maybe, just ask maybe, if they would want to help us out for a period of 60 days and get an employment agreement with them for 60 days? What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, you got a lawsuit.
That's a good idea. So then that way, that relieves the pressure of making sure that we have a, you know, with the resumes and all that other stuff by October 1st.
Let me just make my position clear. I cannot assure you that you can get rid of that person if that person decides they want to keep the position.
Okay. Going back to a discussion that you and I had earlier about employment agreements,
yeah.
Once an employment agreement is signed, it's legal. If there is a, that's your own words. You can't break an employment agreement. Now, wait a second here. If that person agrees to a 60-day employment period with the borough, I don't care if they sue us or not. They agree to a 60-day employment period.
Dave, you may be right. I'm not going to sit here as a lawyer and tell you are.
But we might not even need, Dave, a temporary, because we might right away get somebody.
Our next meeting is October 4th. That statute says October 1st.
Right, but I suggested to have a meeting.
It doesn't say the governor's going to act on October 1st either.
Yeah, he could.
The reason I bring it up is to just bring it up so you're aware of
it.
Let's see if we can do interviews maybe next Tuesday. And if we can come to the decision there, we beat the deadline.
But what do we consider this interim person that said, they would handle? What's that person that said that would help us out? Like, how does that fall into the whole thing?
The person that's helping us is just helping us to make sure we're abiding by the assessing requirements. They're not sitting in the office. They're not doing any work. They're there if we have any questions or concerns. That's above the assessment clerk's authority.
Oh, okay.
She's just lending us her
expertise. Yeah.
Okay.
So we couldn't, think we could reach out to a neighboring community, Franklin Township.
Well, it's very possible. There's provision in the statute that permits shared assessors.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say shared temporary assessors. The answer is, Dave, would you probably get away with it?
Yeah.
Because most people who are going to agree to that are going to abide by their agreement. I'm a lawyer. I've got to tell you about the downside. Let you take the risk.
I'm ready to take some risks. Okay. Given the scenario, I would say it would be wise to do it.
How long would it take us to go ahead if you wanted to do a shared services agreement? these things, would be used, would be quicker to actually hire somebody for this position?
John, yes.
Or actually go into a shared, for shared services?
Yeah, that's a lot of negotiation.
You need a resolution, you need a...
Well, why even do that? Why don't we just hire a person? I mean, we're willing to come and meet in an extra session.
All right, my take on this is, look, unfortunately, Tom passed away more than 2 weeks ago. We could have had this discussion at our last council meeting, and we wouldn't have been under the time constraints that we're under right now. I don't want to be rushed in appointing someone who's going to get tenure in 4 years.
They don't have to get tenure. They only get reappointed, only if you're reappointed at the end of 4 years do they get tenure. In other words, you have 4 years to evaluate.
Still doesn't matter. I think that between now, what's today, 20th, we're talking, what, another 10 days? We have 10 days to fill this position when we could have had a month, almost a month. This is how this council operates. You're under the gun, you've got to do this. I don't see why we can't appoint someone temporarily. And that would be, we go out, we advertise, we find out if this person, whoever it is that you're speaking about, who's going to lend a hand, they sign a temporary agreement saying that they stay for 30 days. And after 30 days, they be gone. Because employment agreements, from my understanding, is they can't be, they're a legal document. And if we say we're only going to hire you for 30 days, well, then it's 30 days.
Mr. Jewell, what do you think?
I agree with that. It'll give us the reading room to make a decision, not to rush.
Mr. Boyle?
I like Higgins' looking at all avenues with the shared service. There is an opportunity here to think about it. As far as meeting the deadlines and stuff like that, whatever decision we're going to have to make, it's going to have to be a quick one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to get through that, we need to have that thing filled. And unfortunately, it's not by anything that we have done. So, I probably didn't say much of anything there. Go with the original plan. Get the five candidates. Let's interview.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Valentine?
I agree with Councilman Boyle.
Okay. Mr. Torres?
Yeah, I agree too, but I did want to say that...
You agree with who?
Well...
So there's no confusion.
Okay, let me just get it straight. That Mr. Higgins had certainly a good idea. We really do need more time to interview people. But I do agree that under the constraints, it's better to have a meeting. Full council next week, so I agree with that choice.
Okay. Mrs. Levin?
Yeah, I agree with Councilman Boyle, too. I think if we're going to be advertising, we might as well be advertising for the resumes that we need. And it sounds like the manager already is aware of people that are interested. It's not like we're starting from scratch with absolutely no one to even consider. So I think in this case, it's going to be easy to find a qualified candidate. So I say the original plan.
Okay. I agree with that also.
Can I just speak to that one more time?
Sure.
I don't disagree with going out for resumes, and I don't disagree with having the resumes in where we can do interviews on that. What I'm saying is, if we don't find anybody, we still have to dual track it. Or if we get five resumes, we're forcing ourselves to accept one of them, and I can't buy that.
But in the meantime, we could solicit, too, from the neighboring townships if we want to do a shared service. Maybe that could be incorporated in somehow within a contract agreement like that so that, you know, depending on the resolution or getting past the shared service in the future, you know. So
do you want to direct the manager to reach out to other municipalities?
As well as to the league publication and the association that he was going to do anyway. Yes, I would think that's a good idea.
Consider along with permanent independent.
Yeah, because this way we can maybe take advantage of a shared service. I think is definitely a good idea. So.
Well, understanding that a shared service will take some time.
Yeah, but we can maybe still hire them in the meantime under the, you know, basically what I'm saying. We can just have our attorney draft up the contracts, you know, such that if there's a shared service agreement, then it would take effect
right.
Into that.
Is everybody available next Tuesday for the interviews?
Yes.
Yeah,
27th. That would be yes over here.
Okay, 7 p.m.?
want to do it even earlier, if you can file it April 6th. Give us more time, give us more time to scroll up a little bit.
Yeah, 7 looks like a good time.
Would you, just a suggestion, would you want to have a backup date also? Because, you know, these are people who work commonly in municipalities and sometimes have night meetings already scheduled, so you wouldn't want to lose a good candidate.
On Thursday or backup?
Yeah, like, and if you advertise them both, and you're happy with, and everybody shows up on the one, you've paid for the cost of advertising, but at least you have a backup and you've already advertised.
So what's the backup date?
Tuesday and Thursday, so it would be the 27th and the 29th.
So we're going to call this what, emergency session?
No, it's just regular meeting.
Okay.
This is special meeting.
But, all
right. Emergency day meeting, 29th.
Back emergency day. Secondary day. Backup. Because should somebody not be able to make it on the Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, do we have anything else for this? Okay, then at this point I'd like to open up the audience portion for remarks, petitions, statements, and testimony from guests. You just state your name and address for the record, please, sir.
And Bill DeHaas, 77 North Jackson Ave.
What can we do for you, Mr. DeHaas?
Well, Patrick, Councilman Boyle is aware of it, and Mr. Cushing is aware of what's going on here. I have a problem with the road back by my house. I was here in December 15th, 2009.
Yeah, you're by the railroad tracks?
Yes, sir.
Is that North Jackson, off of North Jackson?
Yeah.
I had a, just update council, I met with Phil on the 9th of September. We're still having difficulties in getting this North Jackson Ave resolved. We've got the winter time coming up. I'm just not comfortable, convinced who owns what piece of parcel. So we opened it back up. I reached out to Dick so he could be prepared. We wouldn't waste time with redundancies as to what it is here that we're going forward. So that I asked Bill to come in tonight so you have an opportunity to speak to the council as whole. He was here once before in 2009.
So we're not plowing as of this moment or for this winter?
That is the direction the borough of Washington is going.
Okay. Because we can't determine ownership of the road and get the permission.
You know, it's probably that and more.
Okay.
Some people have determined ownership and some others aren't quite sure if that's the case.
To that point, Scott, took, well, our map is, our tax map is way out of date. The last time it was updated is 1987.
No, it's 2007.
2007?
Yes.
For sure.
I was just there to pay.
Okay, because then the copy that I have is way out of date.
Okay.
Because we just looked at it, remember?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I got the tax map right here, 2007. I have a
okay.
Woman.
2007. So then still in question. The property lines are still in question, though?
Well,
based on that map?
Everything I have here, the biggest have it, is 75 resolution stating that nobody's paying taxes on it and because it's probably a public road. They subdivided the property back then. So the town granted egress onto this road, which if it was private property, you can't do that. It's against the law. Plus they have a sewer easement back, and we have a sewer easement back there on that road. So I've been there for 23 years, the road's been there for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it's private property, and I'm kind of not understanding it because I did get all the tax maps here for all the railroad property in town, from Sewer Gardens to Acme, from Railroad Ave to past Warren Lumber.
So could you just back up, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Railroad property.
I know, but the issue
so
or the plow on the road thing, is that what we're talking about? It's all
yes,
but
so this, what I'm getting to the point is, the only part that any section along railroad property, the railroad track, is a 300-foot section of road, which is my road, that Rich is telling me is private property, which is Conrail's property. And I'm not understanding how 300 foot, they only own one road in, next to their property for 300 foot for the whole town, for the whole railroad. And, I mean, I know you gave me this thing here, Rich. You gave us the thing, it's this tax thing in the back. That's Prospect Street.
Yeah.
No. Let me see if I can bring us up to where we are.
All right.
Okay. And again, I don't want to cut you off, but I can see council might have some questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody sort of understood.
Well, I understand that they haven't been in the loop.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Let me just kind of explain. And I gave you out a package of documents. I gave Bill a copy before the meeting, so
yes,
he would, you know what everybody's talking about here. And what I would suggest you do is you go to the second to last document there in the package, okay? And it's a map that looks like this, all right? Second, it should be the second to last document. It's a colored map. And it probably would help also if you look at, there's a copy of a tax map in there too, which is page 4. Sheet 4 is page 3 down at the bottom, okay? And let's start with the tax map. If you look at that tax map and you see 31 there on the right, and then you see Jackson Avenue going up, and then you see that corridor down in the center that says Lackawanna Railroad Company System, that's the railroad that goes through there, all right? And if you see up on top of that, and I'll have my own glasses here, so there's a thin strip that's shown on there that kind of crosses Jackson Avenue there. And you'll see, if you look closely, there's a little circle just below the strip, right after the word system, that says 1.05, okay? 1.04, sorry. I told you I'm not going to have
it.
So that refers to the strip there. Now, if you go back to the map, that kind of shows you that particular green strip there is the same thing except on this colored map. And Bill's house is essentially right at the, I guess it would be the
northwest
end of that strip, right, Bill?
Okay. Where that yellow is?
Yeah, the yellow.
Yeah, there's three little numbers there.
One of the two is
essentially where it is. So what the concern is this. This property that goes through here, I guess it's gravel or whatever, Bill, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives the appearance of a road, okay? And the question is, who owns that? Bill says, look, I've been using that as my driveway for...
I was told by the town
that
was a town road.
Right.
I'm going to be using it for my driveway.
And the railroad says, hey, it's our property. Okay. Now, the question is, okay, what does the borough do? Your policy is not to plow private property without the permission of the owner. Okay. So when this issue came up, it came to me, okay, and the question was, who owns the property? Do we have a right to have the borough vehicles go on the property? Bill says, hey, it's my property. I've been using it for years. There's a sewer line.
I never said it was my property.
I'm sorry. Fair enough. You have a right-of-way across
it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to misstate it. And the railroad apparently claims it has a right-of-way. So the factual basis is actually set forth in the documents that are here. And if you go through the list of documents, the first document is a letter from Lenny Artigmere, local lawyer, okay? And there's a memo there to John Byrd from Alan Fisher back in 2003. And this is not quite through chronological order, but it kind of sets the stage here. And you can see that this issue has been going on with Bill for a number of years. I received a call from Bill DeHaas.
Can I interrupt one second? Yeah. So it's not your property. You were told it's the borough's property.
Because they have
because
a sewer
because
easement
this
on that
whole
property.
No plow thing,
yeah.
We found out it's the railroad property, and the railroad property doesn't want us plowing it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, not that they don't want you plowing it. It's they want Bill to sign a right-of-way agreement to pay $100 a year.
But they also it was also offered to the town. It wasn't just offered to me. It was also offered to the town. It was extended to the town, too.
Oh, you mean the offer of the $100 a year?
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, the background of this thing is actually in the document number 4, okay? Because, again, Bill, you correct me if I misstate things, but the way this property was, and again, if you take a peek at the map, there's the prior page, the map, there's actually, you can see there's two lots there. There's 11, and Bill's is 1101, right?
Yeah.
Bill? Okay. Mm-hmm. 1101 was originally part of 11, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, does 11 get access onto Jackson Avenue?
North Jackson.
North Jackson.
Out by 31.
Right. So the owner at the time, back in 1975, was Donald R. Warning, all right? He came before the planning board, and wanted to subdivide the lot, because apparently both buildings, Bill, is that right, were originally on the lot? In other words, he didn't construct a new one.
No.
There were two of them on one lot, and they wanted, I guess, to sell one to you, or sell one, not to you, but sell one, and then have the other one as a separate taxing lot. So, anyway, they come in, and it's discussed before the planning board. You have the minutes right there. And the issue of access to the lot is discussed in the planning board. And Charlie Seabolt, a longtime lawyer in this area, became judge, represented the applicant. Charlie Lee was, I guess, the planning board attorney at that time. And they went back and forth on the thing. And basically, Mr. Seabolt provided some cases saying that there was a right-of-way across this particular property, okay? And I guess the way I read it, Bill, the engineer had raised a question, I think, about the right-of-way, because they make reference to Doug Cherry's letter. Cherry was an engineer, I think the borough engineer at the time. Yeah, Doug Cherry. But anyway, it was resolved by a resolution.
Well, he was just talking about the dwellings, because the dwelling already existed, like you said before. Both dwellings existed. If you read up above here, it says, Mr. Cherry's report inquiring about the setbacks is appropriate since the dwellings already exist.
Right. Okay.
So that has nothing to do with the road.
You may be right. I'm not going to that. But anyway, then the resolution was prepared that permitted the subdivision. And essentially, what was agreed upon was there had been what's called a prescriptive right. Okay? A prescriptive right meaning that the property, Lot 11, had been using that property of what the railroad claims that it owns, Lot 104, for a long enough period that a right was built up in the property owner of Lot 11 to cross over Lot 104 to get out to North Jackson, right? So the board said, okay, we'll allow the subdivision. That subdivision probably wouldn't be allowed today. Rules are a little different, you know.
But it also brings up about the sewer easement. That's why they allowed it, too.
Yeah.
That the town has on there.
Now, the interesting thing is the manager tells me there's no actual sewer easement. There's no document.
Well, unfortunately, it is there.
Yeah.
I mean, whether there's a document or not, but it is there.
I understand. There's a sewer underneath there. I don't think there's any dispute about that. Yeah. Now, it's kind of a strange situation. So, anyway, then when Bill buys his property, and there is a copy of his title policy there. Now, there's one issue, Bill, that I just want to bring to your attention, because my question was, well, okay, you got a title policy. Why not just go to the title company and say, okay, I bought title insurance to cover my right of access.
Yes.
There's an exclusion there in the policy that says lack of right of access to and from the land. Okay, so there's a little exception there in the policy.
Is that for my sewer easement? Which page are you looking at?
It's the one that's down at the bottom right-hand corner. It's BOW/DeHaas 6, the marking on there. And it's number 3 of the exceptions there that are there. So, but if you look at it, if you look at Bill's deed, which is there, interestingly enough, prepared by Charlie Lee, basically, if you look at the second page, and that's it would be the second page of DeHaas 7. And it says, subject to the rights of use of a macadam roadway in the rear of the main property for a prescriptive right-of-way for ingress and egress to the rear of the property, as stated in this resolution of approval for minor subdivision, that's the one we talked about earlier. Prescriptive right, like I say, is like a adverse possession, where you use it for a certain period of time and you get an easement under the circumstances. So then what happens, you know, this issue comes up, we have these discussions. I think for a period of time, Bill, the borough was actually plowing it. Were they plowing
Since 1952, my neighbor said he's been here since 1952.
So there had been. So then the policy of the borough became, look, we don't want to be on private property, okay? So I'm not sure how Norfolk and Southern actually got notified of this, but at some point in time, they came up with a document that they sent, I don't know if they sent it to Bill or whatever, but there's a copy of it under the salmon-colored page there that is actually a proposed right-of-way agreement where Norfolk and Southern, for $100 a year, it's on a land lease, would allow the right-of-way to be memorialized, if you will, in a document that they agreed to, all right? And that's where that little aerial map that's there that has the green card on there. Now, here's the thing, and Bill hadn't seen this before today, but the question is, who owns Lot 104, all right? We don't have a title search as to Lot 104, all right? So we don't know the history of Lot 104. The tax, the land is taxed to the railroad, okay? Now, Bill had a question about this last page of the document, which I showed him before. Neither of us have seen it before today. And this is the actual tax assessment information for Lot 104. The owner, Bill, where you had mentioned the street there, owner Street, that's the street in Cleveland, Ohio, where the railroad, where they send the tax bills to. See what I mean? Where it says Prospect,
mm-hmm.
Prospect Avenue. That's the address for Erie Lackawanna. It's now Norfolk and Southern. So the problem is this. Policy of the borough is you have to have the property owner's permission to go on to do the plowing, okay? The railroad says, and there's some evidence, that they own this 104, which is Bill's driveway. Bill clearly has, well, anyway, has a prescriptive right to use it. Been using it, apparently it's been used since 52, had been previously plowed by the borough before the policy. The practical problem is, as I saw it as the attorney, and respectfully to Bill and Sharon, you have a dispute as to the ownership of property. You say, I have this right to go in and out. You clearly do. The question is, does that, your prescriptive right, in other words, your history of right, allow the borough to use it? Okay? Now, you would argue, obviously, that it does. The railroad apparently takes a slightly different position, saying, no, if you're going to come on our property, you have to have our permission to do it. You have to pay $100 a year. So the question is, what do we do here in these circumstances? The borough obviously doesn't mind plowing the road because it plows other private roads as long as it has permission. The practical problem is we as a municipality can't go on private property without having a right to go on private property. You know what I mean? The potential, I don't think this is a likely potential, but potentially if we go on somebody else's property, we're trespassing and we're violating their constitutional rights, believe it or not. So we would be doing basically a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We're violating people's rights. Now, I'm exaggerating that in this sense, in a real technical sense.
So I have a question.
Oh, sure.
Then what do you do when you have to go on there and fix it, when you go in there to do your work on their sewer, the sewer easement that goes on that road? You're trespassing on then too.
We call them and get their okay.
Oh, is that right? Okay. So the manager just said, and you're right about that.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you. They really should be.
I mean, that's my point, is if they're offering me $100 to lease it, why doesn't the town lease it for $100? Because they have just as much interest in that road as I do, because they have a sewer easement under there.
You know, I mean, that would be a possibility.
I'm not asking that
no,
have the road curved or nothing.
I understand. I don't think, let me just think that through for a second, because you're right in this sense that we have a sewer in there, been there for years.
Yeah.
It's a practical matter. No one's going to tell us to take our sewer out,
even
if there's no easement, although it's better to have an easement, because we probably have the same prescriptive rights
for
the sewer that you have. Sewer easements are subterranean easements.
Yeah, but you still have to drive on top to get to them.
Yeah, and usually when you have a regular easement, what you have is the subterranean easement that gives you the right to have it there. Then there's usually what they call a working easement that allows you to get access to do repairs, providing you correct it. Now, maybe.
So would that also include snow removal?
not normally was.
What if you have a problem with the sewer in the winter?
Well, yeah, then you'd have to go in there and you'd have to do the access.
Can we compare this to, I don't know, the street, running along the track between Broad and South Lincoln Avenue? I believe that is railroad property, correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know.
No, it is.
We file that, we maintain that, and you also drive in that. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a public road per se, but people still drive on that. Okay, and you've seen the comparison.
There's another one too, Justin, from South, East Store Street to North Jackson Avenue.
Being that that grandfather, so to speak, I don't know how the railroad or folks ever compare that or how they would consider that. We could probably compare those two cases to what he is speaking about.
I don't know.
I think the borough got a hold of Norfolk Southern, got on the good end, and had a discussion with them about that. I think we can resolve it.
Okay.
Well, why can't you just call and say, can we snow? We can snow, you know, plow today or something like you do to fix the sewer.
Bill had done that, and then they came back with this agreement that requires payment of $100 a year.
How much did we get in taxes from them for that particular piece?
Zero.
I thought you just said that we send them a tax bill.
No, we send them tax notifications, but they're tax exempt as a railroad.
Dick, I have a question. Did anybody doing this title search, or I don't know if your office did any, okay.
We didn't do any title search.
Well, the question I would have, and I think that maybe Broad Street might be handled differently because it would go back to the history. And then in the history, we should look at 201, lot 201 on this map, because that's adjacent on the other side of North Jackson, and it's the same strip, but maybe that at one time was a continuation into 104, and maybe, you know, we could learn more by investigating lot number 201. If you see it there, it's that other strip.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's probably right. I'm not sure it helps to solve this problem.
It may not, but it's definitely worth investigating, I would think.
I mean, look, it's...
Because...
Yeah,
at one time, it probably was all one.
Dick, I'm just confused. I'm just out in the transportation field. I work for a railroad. I'm very familiar with right-of-ways and what the widths are. As far as I know, my knowledge, the right-of-way from the center of the track. Now, in this area, it was a double-track line at one point. Not anymore. It's only one track. But it's still considered a double-track right-of-way up until the bridge. In the center of the rails, 15, 20 feet over, is one side of the right-of-way. Only was 15, 20 feet from the center of the rail. That's track one. Track two on the other side, same thing. 15 to 20 feet to the left would be considered the right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused to where the right-of-way ends. I see the strip of land here, which is in limbo.
Right.
To me, being a double-track right-of-way, you have to confirm that with Norfolk Southern. At the time, that was two tracks. So, as far as I'm concerned, it looks like the end of the embankment should be the end of the right-of-way, 15, 20 feet.
Is that right-of-way you're talking about universal or just for your
organization? That is for Norfolk Southern. That's universal permanent book center. I even looked at it on the internet,
okay.
So just double check that. But the company I work for is basically the same thing. Now, having a rail yard is different because you've got a wider area. But what this looks like here, two tracks there at one time, it looks to me 15, 20 feet on the right should be the end of the right way, from the center of the rail.
Does that include the 104, is what you're saying, or no?
I don't believe it does. From what it looks like to here, it doesn't.
Justin,
you can confirm that for me if you want to.
Well, here's the deal. This is Norfolk Southern took it over from Conrail,
right.
Took it over from the area Lackawanna. Who knows what was, you know, from the 1850s or whatever. So why they have that particular strip along there? Maybe it was a siding at some point in time. You know, it could be a million things. The questions. It seems to me the options you have in this situation are. You could do a title search, but I mean, I'm not sure that's going to cost you probably $1,000, and I'm not sure it's really going to help this situation because Bill does the search and he owns the property. He says, I got a right of way across there. You know, that's I got this prescriptive easement that goes across there, and I've been using it. We've been using it for 50 years, and that's my claim. I don't claim that I own it. I've never had title.
Well, I've been claiming it was the town because I've always been told it was the town.
Yeah. We don't have any evidence. There's no evidence that we have that the town owns it. The evidence that seems to exist is that the railroad owns it because that's the way it's assessed. That's the way the tax is set. That's the way the tax map is set up. So I don't think a title search is really going to... I think it's going to spend a lot of money and not get us past where we are now. The next thing is for the borough to say, screw it, we're just going to do it, we're going to plow it. And that's what had been advocated by Lenny Artigley.
Yeah.
He said, it's not going to be a big problem. You did it for 20 years, do it, all right? it's not something, again, what I recommend, but it's a possibility. The third thing is, kind of Bill kind of alluded to it there, which is we're working now, and this I haven't discussed this with Rich, so he may have perspective on this, but we're working to try to get an easement for our sewer line. Maybe we could, part of that could be getting something that would allow us to plow the road, too. I don't know what Norfolk and Southern would do. I don't know who would pay for that. I don't know who would be fair to pay for that. You know what I mean? So those are issues that could be decided. You guys get the big bucks because you have to make those kind of policy decisions about, you know, what you're going to do. But
I'll
think that way.
I'll trade your salary.
Yeah, but then I get to vote. That might not be a good thing. So the bottom line is that might be something to explore to try to solve this problem. You got the winter coming up, so I don't think this issue is going to get worked out with the railroad because I'm not sure that they consider this at the top of their priority list. I'm not 100% sure, but it may be something to explore. That, and then you got to kind of figure out what you're going to do this winter.
Just out of curiosity, exactly what is the actual area of that space?
It's 300 foot?
300 feet, width about a car and a half, maybe.
It's like one path with the plow truck.
And you're here to ask council to do the agreement and pay the $100, or would you have another solution?
Well,
we didn't get to finish your what you want.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a perfect world, that would be perfect, but the other question I had for council, too, was like, you haven't been out there in a while, but the sewer easement, who's going to continue to maintain that? I know railroad's not. And I got some pictures here since Irene went through. The road is, like, completely washed out. We have manhole covers sticking up a good 4 or 5 inches. I barely get over it with my car. If I rip my oil pan off, who's going to pay for that? I mean, you guys are welcome to see the pictures if you want.
You know, Bill, you're bringing up a separate issue.
Yeah, he's bringing.
Maybe you don't want to bring this
up.
Well,
I know.
It's the issue of maintenance.
You know, I know, but it's your sewer line that's sticking. You know, sewer things that are sticking up. I mean, I don't know who's supposed to fix that. I mean, if the town had it and went into the lease agreement with them, then there would be. I wouldn't be here.
Well,
because then the town can say that we're leasing the property, we can plow it.
But if we had a sewer, if there was a sewer easement agreement, it would not address.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But you have, I mean, like I'm saying, the town has just as much interest in this road as I do.
It has an interest in the sewer line.
Yeah, correct.
It really,
and
I mean, it doesn't.
You have to drive on the road to get to the sewer line. I understand that.
Yeah. Well, I mean
it's, you're not going to go over the tracks to get to the sewer line. You got to drive on the road to get to the sewer line.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So, that's the interesting issue that
we've
got to kind of figure out some solution to.
I just find it interesting also, this might be just like a little picky thing, but I mean, they're agreeing that there is, for $100 they have all agreed to do that. So, if they agree that, you know, there should be an easement there. Why don't they just go ahead and do it without the $100? You know what I'm saying? It just feels like they're just trying to get money.
Well, again, that's why it's a need to manage.
They might not even own the property. That's the other question that we really don't know.
As far as we know, until we made a decision not to maintain private roads, the railroad company had
no
interest whatsoever.
Right.
So we pushed the button. And say, oh, okay. Well,
that was my question.
Here's the lease. We're gonna,
right.
You need to do this, you need to do that.
Why wouldn't that work?
Not good.
Right. Yeah, we're trying to do the right thing.
But again, we have two other roads in the town in the same scenario. I think the manager called Oracle so explained the case nicely.
Then you might be leasing three new areas.
No. Yeah, that's not a good
idea. I can address that if you'd like. The one you're referring to on Broad Street is, even by the borough's tax map, is private property. At some point in the past, the borough paved it, and it became this kind of quasi-public road. We will not plow it this year. We will not maintain it. I spoke with the railroad company via email several times, and he actually got back to me today. I've been asking them for several months to come out and delineate all of their property, so I know specifically what is theirs versus what is ours, so we can make sure no one trespasses on their property. The other one that you're referring to is on the other side of the railroad tracks is actually part of, what's that road?
East Stewart.
East Stewart Street.
No, it's not. It's not on a tax map, it's not.
Let me finish. It's actually considered part of East Stewart Street. It's the same thing. The railroad company, when they come out, I'm going to have them delineate all of their property, that including.
Yeah, but, you know, we can't go by what they say because we don't know if they're correct.
They've agreed to bring out one of the surveyors.
Okay, surveyor, but it's really the answer lies in the title search. I mean, really, that's really...
Well, the
surveyors could say it's their property. And then all of a sudden, we get this lease agreement in front of us for $100 for each of these particular things. Now, this is the only, in Mr. DeHaas's case, is the only one that's isolated property. Okay, the other particular railroad things don't have it. So we shouldn't even go there with the Broad Street, crossings in those. I mean, that's maybe going to open up a can of worms we don't want to see or whatever. We'll just continue not plowing it if it's private property, and that's fine. Because it doesn't, I mean, in his case, sorry to single you out, but this is some isolated house. It was agreed upon at one time by our planning board, so we should try to help him get some sort of access, if we can. And, I would propose now if we could make a resolution in the interest of Mr. DeHaas and his predicament that we would take over the plowing, and if it means paying the $100, then we'll do that. But I would volunteer my own services to go to the courthouse. I'm familiar with title search, and I do believe that we would learn a lot by this lot number 201. So, I'll do that investigation on my own and report back to council by the next meeting.
But the attorney said it costs like $1,000.
No, not if I do it myself.
He's going to do it.
Right, exactly.
He's going to do his own title search.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. Because we're not going to spend $1,000 to have a title search company authorize it, but I can let the council know what I learned, and that's no charge.
Let me raise two other issues. The issue of maintenance was raised by Bill, okay? You have to think about what you want to do in that regard, okay? Because, I mean, ultimately, this is private property, you know what I mean? And the question is, how far do you want to go? You raise an interesting point. Well, if your sewer veins are sticking up there and interfering with his access, you probably have some obligation to go out there and try to make it passable, because that seems reasonable. The thing that I suggest to you, Bill, you probably, for the long term, ought to probably reach out to the railroad and see if you could either buy that property or get more clear-cut rights, because when you go to sell that house...
I know that.
You're going to have a problem.
Unless the town leases the property, then it's at least road by the town. Then I wouldn't have that problem.
I don't think the town's going to go. I don't know what they want to do, but it's not going to be. I don't think they're going to want to make that a public road because there's a lot of liability associated with that. I mean, that's their call. I'm not a governing body member, but that it's like, okay, maybe we can work something out for plowing. But if you go to the maintenance, I mean, that's a whole different level. You would be better off owning that. So when you go to sell, you could say, hey, I own this little strip. I can't imagine what the railroad cares about that. And I think in the long run, it would add to the value of your, it certainly will add to the value of your house, because anybody who goes to buy that, because it's a prescriptive right, and again, I hate to bring this kind of stuff up, but I don't know if you can get prescriptive rights against the railroad.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of strange rules. They control the legislature for a long time in this state. And I didn't look at it, but I'm just not sure you can get prescriptive rights against the railroad. But I raise that more for your benefit over the long run. And think about that.
Well,
I
wouldn't be here either if we didn't go to the private road thing again, Patrick said.
Yeah.
So we, as a municipality, reach out about that sewer easement, which you said you have already been working on.
Yeah, and maybe
that part of that conversation ought to be about, with the winter season coming up. If you have the railroad representatives here at that time, it's a perfect opportunity to bring all the action that road needs to have taken care of. It doesn't hurt to do that.
I agree. I think that's
right. But just that particular issue, that's it, not the other streets.
The problem I'm having with the sewer easement is they're requesting documents on the design and installation and construction of that sewer line, and they don't exist. So I'm having trouble even getting them to agree to a sewer easement, because I can't provide the documents that they're looking for. At some point in the past, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, who knows, the borough installed a sewer line there without the then property owner's knowledge.
Well, maybe not. Maybe they have.
Or I shouldn't say that. It's just not in writing. It's just not in writing. There's no easement in writing. When we go to maintain it now, we ask the private property owner on the northern side if we can access our line from his property, and he allows us on there to televise the line and perform maintenance. That's on the Cattell court side.
After the
line goes all the way through there. He allows us onto his property to maintain the line and inspect it as we need to. When we do it, we don't go on the railroad property to inspect it. We go on the gentleman who owns Cattell court side. He lets us go on there.
But in good faith, we can certainly have that conversation with the railroad representatives.
Sure.
We want to do what's right, and right, you know, and here we still have some. We still have something that's been defined of, you know, who actually may own that property. But there's other arguments as well with the homeowner that, you know, the officials of this borough at one time have it in documents and records with the word prescriptive, you know, these units. So we got to get this settled. And we do our due diligence to show in good cause and good faith to get that conversation started.
May I ask what council would like to do if they don't get in touch with me or are not willing to contact me or negotiate before snow comes? It took me about a month and a half to finally get in touch with this gentleman to pick a date for him to come out, or at least talk to me about picking a date for him to come out. I'm not ignoring this. I just
No,
and what I'm saying is I can only do so much. If they're unresponsive prior to the snow coming down, I need guidance from council what they want to do. I hate to wait to the last minute, and my goal is not to put anyone on the spot, but.
So if they don't get back.
We got whacked with some pretty heavy snow. We went out there last winter twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like 3 or 4 feet of snow, you know. But we did it before.
So we would continue plowing until we get resolution, or what?
If we do so, we do so at our own risk. That's the problem. At that point, we are trespassing. And if council recalls, the ordinance that was passed previously required, and this road was specifically named, required consent of the property owner in order to plow it. We've not gotten consent of the property owner to plow it. If we do so, it's at your own risk.
Well, when you have to plow, calling them to see if they could do a one-time thing.
I said that before.
This property is still... The ownership is still a question mark, you had said earlier.
The only thing I know is from the records that we've gotten here,
right,
is that it's assessed to the railroad. In other words, our records show the railroad as the owner. Who knows?
I will contact the railroad and see if they'll
speed the process up. If there is, because of the track issue, if we could find out exactly what the current status of that is now, that might just totally eliminate this problem. But then again, you have the question of, okay, then who owns that land, right?
And the prescriptive rights that could be involved with it, which we're not sure applies to a railroad.
How are we able to find out?
Title, sir.
I'm talking about the dimensions of...
You'd have to find out what the title said.
Well, first of all, is it
going to
cost money?
But you don't know if those rails were ever changed in the 100 years.
That's
who would be the person that would determine that? Would you have to have like a surveyor or
something?
Now, would that be a cost to us if they did that?
Assuming they want to. Railroad companies are historically unresponsive. They have a separate set of federal, they're got it by the federal statutes govern them. So they're kind of, I don't want to use the phrase untouchable, but they're very, very difficult to work with. Yeah. And they're just, they're notoriously unresponsive. They only tend to come out when their track is damaged.
Mm-hmm. Well, we seem to have somebody from the railroad with the railroad ties, which me, you know, so you were able to get that person to act. So I think we can do the same here. You know how to do this thing. You can get that going.
Fair enough.
Quite confident in the buildings, Rich. I think you can probably get the situation probably right.
I'll see what I can find out and report back at the next meeting.
Following
this
on that,
Bill? Yes. Okay. Karen? Okay. Thank you. All right, thanks. Thank you, Dick. Well, I'm going to talk because he has a little problem. We live on McKinley Avenue.
Could you have your name and address for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Marion William Palo. 17 McKinley Avenue here in Washington. Now, we have a drainage problem. You know, right behind us is Myrtle Avenue and the canal bed. And we've been getting flooded with water from there. We need storm drains. You know, they put them on the end of the street, but right in the middle, we don't have any. And right now, we have a sinkhole. And we filled it in. With how much, Bill?
20 bags of 4 pound.
About 800 pound. And we know that's not going to hold it back. And now we're getting water into our basement. It's not a basement. We have a bi-level, and we have a finished first floor, and there's the water seeping in.
Yeah, the sinkhole is on the road?
It's in our garden, because everything's washing down. We had like a river coming down at us.
It's coming down.
Are you familiar with Myrtle Avenue? Do you live on the same street, Stephen Allfall, who lives right down the street from you in McKinley?
Yes.
A while back, Mr. Allfall's neighbor came with the same problem. Yes. And we remember we were looking into that because there was a water issue.
Yes.
A lot of the runoff coming from the canal from the body shop on the corner. I think that was part of their problem as well, too. It came and actually grew to the second floor.
Well, you know, they put that housing development behind Myrtle Avenue. Now, where they put the curbing, it stops right behind the neighbor across the street. So that stops them from getting flooded. But as soon as they stop, everything's rushing down.
Right, right. And I had brought that up. I mentioned that to the manager.
We checked all of the, we physically televised all the lines on McKinley, on Pickle, and the ones that we were able to access on Myrtle. There's a 24-inch storm drain there, and surprisingly, for a relatively small road, Myrtle has a lot of storm drains that were installed. I'm guessing and this was part of me, that they straighten that area out. They used to curve, and then they straighten that road out. They installed additional sets of storm drains up there. So for a short road, there's a surprising amount of storm drains up there. They were all clean. Water was flowing in all of them. In fact, on the, let me see here, west side of Myrtle, just before 31, there's a secondary set of storm drains that picks up additional water from Pickle to divert it out so it doesn't even go south. Now, I reached out to the engineer, and Mr. Alpa, I actually wound up speaking with him after the fact when he brought the issue up. According to our engineer, a hydrological study that was done many years ago, there's an underground plume of water under there. And with all the rain we've been recently having, imagine, you know, a bowl. You can only put so much water in it. Once it meets capacity, the water goes somewhere. There was no storm drains clogged up there during the hurricane or tropical storm, and all the water was flowing. It was just too much water for our storm system to handle.
But we've had this a sinkhole developing in our yard.
We have a tree in.
Because of the stormwater runoff from above?
From above.
Yeah.
I think that she's, Marion, correct me if I'm right, but aren't you saying that there's a lack of curbing on the one side of the street?
Yes.
That everything from the street has gone on the one side?
Well, Myrtle has curbing, and the water, Myrtle is above McKinley, and the water's going down the hill. Down McKinley.
Listen, sir. It doesn't go all the way on Myrtle Avenue. Exactly where it stops, it's cut in half.
Well, right, there's no more curbing to divert it.
And now it's coming down to Mount. And they put the storm drains on the end of the street, but we're in the middle of the street.
They put storm drains on McKinley, you're talking about?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Correct.
But they didn't finish it. They didn't put any in front of our house. And now what we're developing is this pit of water.
44 years we've been living there, and they haven't done a damn thing about it.
Yeah, 44 years, we've never had water coming in, but now in the last year and a half, we're developing this pit.
This is the first I'm hearing about your address. The address I prior looked at was a different address on McKinley, and I spoke with the resident. What I will do is tomorrow, you said you were at 17?
Yeah.
Okay, what I'll do tomorrow morning is I will contact my engineer to see if he can review it, because I know for a fact he happens to be going out there in that area this week on another issue, up above Myrtle. So I'll have him drive by, assess the area, and give me his opinion on the storm drains issue.
Okay.
I don't want to prematurely speak. I can only let you know what I physically saw when we televised the lines on McKinley for the resident further east on McKinley.
All right.
So, as soon as we're through, if you want, I'll step down. I'll just get your name and information. This way, the whole town doesn't know. Your name and phone number.
All right, thank you.
Rich, would that mean a developer agreement with Heather Hill with road improvement?
I apologize.
The curbing and stuff, the developer's agreement when they put Heather Hill in with the curbing?
The problem with this is the curbing that goes all the way down Myrtle. Heather Hill's a separate road off of Myrtle. Goes up off of Myrtle. The curbing in question, and when I was out there last, I'd say maybe 6 weeks ago is when we looked at it last, the curbing goes so far and then it just stops. Now, who and why it decided to stop there, I don't know.
Right.
If it was supposed to go further, it would have been part of the site plan approval. I can check the site plan, what was approved for Heather Hill. Off the top of my head, I don't know. On Myrtle?
No.
Oh, on Heather Hill. Yes, that's correct.
And they do have, I think it's emails.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't own that road until the development is complete, correct. So they're doing all the maintenance on it.
Because I'm concerned that maybe some of that drainage isn't actually reaching the storm drains on that road.
Well, the ones that are going right down the middle are sanitary sewer anyway.
Right.
The storm drains are on the side. So, yeah, they're fine. The storm drains are sufficient. The sanitary sewer ones are the ones that are raising.
Okay.
The
storm drains are flush with the road.
Correct. No, I think one is a little higher, but they put some asphalt to feed it up into it, yes.
Okay. Anyone else from the audience?
Hello. R.J. Sherman, 15 Gardner's Court. When I first came before the council about the issue I'm about to talk about, the only person that was sitting here is Mr. Cushing. He's not sitting here. So I want to give a quick history of where we are. Of my issue. I moved to the borough in 2002. In the fall of 2002, first rainstorm, sewage came up into our basement, into the slop sink, over the slop sink and into the basement. I contacted Kevin at Veolia, I don't know if it was Veolia at the time, described him the problem. He said, yes, there's an issue down there, we're aware of it, we have to go down and blow out the drain pipe. We'll be down tomorrow. We'll get it taken care of. Something we routinely do. Happened again a few months later. Contacted him again. Said he'd be down again to fix it. At that time, I talked to him about if there was a remedy for the issue. This is probably in 2003 at this point. He said, yes. There is a sewer project on South Prospect and Gardner's Court, and this will be taken care of. All right? And plans going to be taken care of. 2004 into 2005, the project finally starts. Sewer project on South Prospect. One day, finally, all the trucks are gone. The big sign at the end of South Prospect is down, and they never came out to Gardner's Court. I contact Kevin. He says, you have to talk to Borough Manager. talked to Borough Manager at the time. He tells me, we weren't going to fix Gardner's Court because it's not the town's problem, it's the residents' problem, and they need to fix it. All right, that's when I started coming before the council, 2005. And following these rainstorms, what I started to see is, I'm a professional geologist, I'm a hydrogeologist, so follow the rain. The backside of Cornish is a dead end. The backside of the Verizon building is also in that same area. All the stormwater runoff from that side of town flows down the hill into the Gardner's Court area. There is no stormwater drainage in the Gardner's Court area. There is a drain out on, I guess, what's now called East Gardner's Court, which used to be the other side of Cornish. But none of the water that comes down from the borough into the Gardner's Court area can flow to that road. That's the first problem, stormwater drainage. Second problem, sewer, as we talked about, and Kevin told me that it was supposed to be fixed. And after talking to the manager, I went back to Kevin and asked him, I said, you told me this was going to be fixed. Not to speak Kevin out there, he off to the side told me it was pulled out of the project at some point. When, I don't know, not sure. Dave, I've been standing down with you at the end of my street, looking in that manhole and watching the sewage pour back toward our houses. Council told me at the time, they started a committee, sewer committee, I think that's when it started, this would be fixed. We're working on getting it fixed. There was a couple small repairs made to the inverted siphon and maybe something else. Still having the same problems, though. Now, the last two storms we had, they were extraordinary by any measure. I understand that. But for sewage to keep coming up into our homes, we're going on 10 years now. Are we still working on this project, or is it?
Sewer. Sewer. Do you want to, or do you want to?
Are we allowed to share this with the residents?
It's a public document.
Sure.
I mean, it's still under consideration.
Yeah.
It hasn't been presented to the governing body yet, so it's up
to
you.
The idea is look at the packet. I'm on the sewer committee as well.
Okay.
I'm in conversation during Irene and Lee with Ms. Gilby.
Yep.
And I understand your frustration. I don't live your frustrations, but I understand
them. The rest of my neighbors won't come here anymore.
Here's the program right here that we have to put into our budget for 2012. You can take that home, you can borrow it. My notes are in there, you know, that I wanted to speak to. I went over that with Councilman Higgins. And you're right. It has been.
And my other question is, when the sewer, we do get that much rain, did they shut it down?
No, I can answer that. If you want, call me tomorrow. I have my copy downstairs as well. You're welcome to look at that as well. The answer to your question, for obvious reasons, everyone knows that this year we got a tremendous amount of rain with those two storms. And the sewer lines themselves, I had my sewer department inspect them during the height of the storm. They were out there in the rain. And the lines were filled to capacity. Sewer lines should not be filled to capacity. Storm drains should. Mm-hmm. When sewer lines are filled to capacity, that indicates one thing, inflow and infiltration upstream. That's forcing water, storm water, into our sanitary sewer drains. So when you have an 8 or 10-inch sanitary sewer pipe and it's flowing, that's a problem. Because the only thing that's supposed to be in there is when you flush the toilet, take a shower, things of that nature. So in addition to the recommendations from the engineer, we still have tremendous I&I problems upstream in the northeastern section of the town that works its all the way down to the sewer plant. Surprisingly, aside from high-level alarms, inverted siphon worked perfectly. Did not back up, did not shut down, did not have a problem. It worked the way it was supposed to. With the recent activities, it was just too much rain, too much I&I in a short period of time. And obviously, when you have all that water trying to fight its way into a small pipe, it's going the path of least resistance, which is unfortunately is your basements. Now, I know that's not what you want to hear, and I know that's not a solution to your problem. I know that the sewer committee has been working diligently with the engineer, and he gave a quite detailed report of here are your options to correct this problem that is now down there. As you can see by Councilman Boyle, you know, it's going to be part of the upcoming budget cycle. This council is working very hard to try and correct this problem. Now we have some stuff. And the funny thing is when I called the engineer, because I update him after all of our storms, the status of all of our pump stations, the sewer plant, etc., he was as shocked as I to see that the siphon didn't fail. Couldn't believe it. They were out there in the rain and they took pictures and everything was working fine, the way it was supposed to. It was forcing just as much water out as it was coming in. Just too much water too fast this time. Now, I know that's not a relief for you to hear, but I want to assure you that this body, the engineer, is working with Veolia Water because they're, you know, giving us their information on the historics of the pipe, and they are working on solutions. Now, as far as the time duration, I can tell you that we have the sewer committee is reviewing it now, and they're going to, you know, I'm assuming, present to the governing body in the very near future, you know, these findings. So either way, it's going to be part of
this right here. These are the recommendations from what can be done down here. We did decide to put in a pump station.
Okay, so the line is not being replaced
on Gardner's Court. No, that wasn't part of it.
No. That wasn't one of the recommendations because...
Did they realize that our home lines come out underneath the sewer line?
Well, one of the problems is the siphon doesn't have a same wet well, if you will, as a pump station does. It's not designed to work like a pump station. Suction of water, it takes the water in and pushes it out. When you have a pump station, it has a huge pit. It can go down as far as 30 feet deep that holds the water to allow it to hold there and then pump it out instead of it staying in line. So now we'll have this underground tank, if you will, that'll hold the water. It then gets pumped out from the station to the sewer plant, and it doesn't stay in the line. There can be no backup if there's no water in line. So when it all comes down and it goes into the pit, there's no worry about it backing up into the system.
Okay, there are other issues down there.
Oh, no.
In the middle of the last storm, I could stand up. Does anyone know Gardner's Court? The bush is going up the center?
Yeah.
Okay, there was sewage coming out of the ground. The line is breached.
Well, that's the I&I problem.
One end to the other.
No, we televise the line. There's no... right there...
Now, I can tell you this. South Prospect, around to the back of Gardner's Court, everywhere there's a road cut, there was water coming up out of the ground that high.
But that I can't say whether that was sewage or stormwater. I can tell you that when my sewer team televised the line, they showed no breach in the sewer line itself.
They might want to televise it again after the last storm.
That's when they did it after the last storm, actually. I had them do it during and after. And the problem is, more I&I than a sewer problem. Sewer lines are only supposed to hold sewage. They should never be filled. A 10-inch pipe should never be filled with fluid. It shouldn't. That's the problem. I&I is more of a problem than the sewer line, in my opinion.
Well, Mr. Sheriff, you're hydrogeologist?
Yes.
So you have some sort of, you know, knowledge about this. What would you suggest? I know you're not an engineer, but, you know.
Well, the first thing I look at is the height of the line. And if you back up from South Prospect back to our Gardner's Court, from everything I've seen, you're going, it's pitched the wrong way. It's not even pitched the wrong way. It's just into that manhole at the end of Gardner's Court. The sewer line going out is higher than what's coming in. That's
basic gravity. I agree. That's one of the factors that when our engineer provided his proposals is going to be addressed. He's not recommending we replace all the sewer line. He's making a recommendation at the point where the siphon is to make repairs to accommodate just that. Among other things. I mean, he gave us several different options for the governing body.
The problem over there is use this as the sewer line. What they're talking about is that when that sewer line was replaced, their laterals were here coming out of the house on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So they should be up the top. So when that, if you put it up here, you can see it with this liquid.
Right.
It's not going to come up here, but mm-hmm. down here, it's going to go past least resistance
sure.
mm-hmm. back into the house. The only thing that's going to help that is what you're saying is to drop the line down.
Right.
Put the laterals in the top so that it will continue to flow.
That's what I thought he was trying
and
to say. Right.
That ends in a manhole below the line out, as opposed to above.
Right.
So it's got to fill up.
Yeah.
it's like you're talking about the pump station, fill it up until it gets that certain point down there.
But that's not one of the...
If I can make...
The secondary issue, that line goes out higher?
We haven't gotten that far yet.
The water coming back in, so when that comes back into that manhole, then it goes down into our home.
Not to sell your concern, sure, but what I would suggest is, you know, let the sewer committee complete their review, let the governing body complete their review, and at that meeting, when the governing body is going to be able to review and comment, the engineer is going to be here anyway. I mean, we're working towards a solution.
Okay.
Next
year's...
You saw the document. The document is here. The governing body now needs to select A, B, C, or D. Which path do we want to choose?
10 years ago, I was told it was being fixed, and they had a document, and they had money, and they had...
I wasn't here 10 years ago, so obviously I'm not going to speculate.
I'm
letting you know, and members of the governing...
That's who I spoke to.
Members of the governing body, please correct me if I'm wrong. Everyone here has understood the urgency of this issue. And they've taken it full force, and the sewer committee's been working very diligently with the engineer.
I do appreciate that. It's just...
I wouldn't say it if it wasn't...
I'm told to have patience, and it's...
Would you like me to give you a call the day that the engineer is going to be here to present to the governing body?
That would be great.
Will do.
I would appreciate that. And one of the fixes that you did propose, and you did offer to give $500 to put a flap on our sewers to close them off?
Oh, to prevent their backflow preventer.
No one could find a plumber to do it.
Backflow preventers on sanitary sewer lines are tricky in the sense that when solids go through the sewer lines, they can keep the...
That wasn't it. They were worried about the amount of pressure coming back in against it. Because if you're putting a Fernco fitting on, which is not for pressure, they were worried that there'd be pressure coming out. They might even just blow the line off. So.
I'm not sure if that's an 8 or 10-inch line. I think it's a 10-inch, but I could be wrong. As soon as the engineer, the governing body is going to be discussing it, and as soon as the engineer is going to be here presenting his findings, I'll be sure to give you a call.
Okay, I appreciate that.
All right.
Secondary concern, again, storm sewers in that area. There are none. Everything coming off the backside of Cornish and the Verizon building ends up in our basement somehow.
You know, I think we'll check the storm drain in the corner of the Verizon parking lot back there. All that is a hole right there. It looks like a storm grate, you know, a catch basin, and it goes nowhere.
It's just a hole?
It's just a hole that fills up. And what he's talking about, water just blows out of there, has nowhere to go.
Every time it rains, we get a river coming down into our yard.
I don't know if that was something that they needed to put in there when they put the parking lot in, and they didn't finish.
Do you know how long that's been there?
Yeah.
No, what they were approved for, that parking lot?
I have no idea. That building was there.
I mean, I can have the engineer speak with them and find out. I mean, the problem with the new stormwater regulations that got passed in 2005 is a lot more restrictive what people can and can't do. In the past, you could just tie your sump pump up, out, and right into the storm base. You know, and that's a lot more restrictive what commercial properties can do. But I can ask them about that as well.
But all this is a hole in the ground. Yeah, it's just a
whole new ground. Now, back in 2005, it probably took me 6 months to get somebody at Verizon at Washington, D.C., and he told me they have all the new gas.
And that very well may be. I don't know the answer to that.
But again, it's not just Verizon, it's also Cornish.
Well, it's everything upstream that contributes in, combined with the stormwater runoff, with the I&I, it has to go somewhere.
Okay.
And unfortunately, you're at the bottom of the line, if you will. You're at the bottom of the hill.
Right.
And that's the problem. Who was the top of it? Unfortunately, it just, I'll have them check out Verizon as well.
You may want to have somebody from the road department check the end of South Prospect where all that water was coming out of the ground. But it wasn't just water coming out, it was stone and soil.
No, we ordered some repair materials today, actually. So.
Okay.
Rich, real quickly, are the inserts installed that we had ordered for the...
The manhole inserts?
Yeah.
About half of them are installed. They're still doing it.
Are they in that area?
I can check with Kevin. He's taking some time off, so I can check with him. Actually, what I can do is call his boss to check on his status. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Anyone else from the audience? Hearing none, I'd accept the motion to close the audience portion.
So moved.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Move on to ordinance. Ordinance 3-2011. For the public hearing and adoption.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Valentine?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
Weaver?
No.
Yule?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
Ordinance 3, 2011, restructuring recreation services.
At this point, I'd like to open up the public hearing on ordinance 3, 2011. This is going to make us, take us from a recreation committee to a recreation commission.
After state approval.
After state approval, yes.
What have you done as far as the...
Mrs. Higgins, I know who you are, but could you come up to the microphone so we can have it all on the record, please?
Don Higgins, 113 Harding Drive.
Thank you.
I know part of the problem with the ordinance in question is that there were some current concerns about the structure of the finances and who was in charge of the finances. Where has that been changed? By statute, if you're a commission, you have full control of your money.
The commission does, you mean?
Correct.
Okay. And that's what we're referring to in this, correct?
Correct. The Rec Commission would have sole authority of the expenditures, but it needs to be in accordance with state and local guidelines.
Right, and had been in the past. It always, the Rec Commissions have always followed policies and procedures of the ordinances of the state and the local municipality. So you took out the portion that said that the manager was in charge of the finances? It was my understanding that that was the concern.
The only reference that I recall is that the ordinance dictates that I have to make sure that the Rec Commission is following state and local guidelines. I have no oversight over how they spend their funds. No different than a library board, board of adjustment, right. Planning board.
Well, that's how it always was before. I mean, the commission always had to follow the policies of the municipality. It never was anything different than that. So I'm not sure what you put in there that was different.
I don't know if it's different, but if it's letter E from the powers and duties of the director, it does reference that the administer and extend departmental funds in accordance with the budget appropriations and ordinances and the financial procedures established by the manager. So it's following our purchasing policies and things of that nature. I don't read in here where it says that the borough manager dictates or has control with the funds.
Okay. Well, was there a reason you felt that you had to put it in there? I mean, every other committee board knows that they have to follow your procedures and your policies. Why do you feel that you need to put that in writing?
Because it's in writing, and now you can always go back. And that was really the staple of me wanting to go to a commission. Mm-hmm. As far as we knew, we had structure in the offices here, and all departments had to follow the structure that was implemented, and that's why I felt confident that the commission could work as it did in the past or without being a committee.
Well, I just want to emphasize that the prior commission did follow
procedures
and policies. Just in case anybody thought that that was something that was not done, that was always done, has always been done, they never did not follow the policies and procedures of purchasing and so on and so forth.
Right.
You couldn't do anything but that. You couldn't purchase anything. You couldn't, you know, put anything through without following the policies and procedures.
Sure.
Of
I think you just further emphasized that. That was in writing. No question. You know, even though it was done properly in the past, just emphasize that point.
Okay. And what is your procedure now going forth with commission members? Tonight is a hearing. What is your policy now going forward? What are you going to do about commission members? Are you going to put it out to the public that they can put an application in? Are you just... I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What are you doing?
Yeah, the application procedure will not change.
in that regard. It will be a citizen's application form stating that you wish to be a member of recreation. Those who currently serve, as long as they are still willing to serve, will be serving. And I believe in a staggered format as it has always been.
And how are these individuals going to be appointed?
That would be by mayor and council approval.
Yes. How are their names going to be brought forth to the council?
The mayor will be bring them forward.
There seems to have been an issue with that in the past. So is there going to be a change with that?
That's,
I think it's unfair to anyone who feels they would like to serve your community, but yet they don't have the fairness of being brought before your full council for a vote.
I'm not following you on. As far as appointments for the commission, and I probably misunderstood, it was going to be reevaluated from committee to commission. I didn't know that the people that were sitting on the committee now had going forward were going to be automatically on the commission. Is that wrong?
That's not in the ordinance. That's a
mayoral discussion.
Yeah, the ordinance simply says...
No, that's not the ordinance.
Right, right.
So is the whole committee now that stands going to be up for appointments, or are they still fulfilling their term?
The committee will be abolished.
Yeah,
the commission will be created.
You have to be a
process that the mayor submits
from,
the name.
From zero.
Right.
But that's not kind of what you said before, right?
Right.
As I intended to do it, as I understood everything, was that those members of the committee who are still willing to participate would be moved forward into the commission, that I would be recommending them into the commission for the staggered terms.
That's a mayoral privilege to do it that way? That's
right.
Okay.
Appointment is the mayor. That's going to be your...
But then we would have to
consider...
Yes or no.
Yes.
Well, my point is that there have been individuals in the past that wanted to serve and wanted to continue with their service, but because their names weren't allowed to come before the full council...
You're saying they're screened out?
They're screened, yes. That is a good way to put it, Councilman Torres. They were screened out before they came before a full council, and I don't think that's fair. And I think that part should be changed in your ordinance, that it should be an appointment by the full council, not just an appointment that is recommended by the mayor only. And I don't think you have any way of being prohibited in changing that.
The attorney's pulling the law.
Thank you, Mr. Finn.
That it's an appointment by the mayor with the advice and consent of the council. It doesn't say anything about how the names are presented.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a selective meeting.
It doesn't rule. Let's see what Dick has to say.
Any folks?
Scary how we can quote things sometimes.
The mayor or other chief executive of the municipality may, in his discretion, appoint not less than 3 and more than 7 citizens members of the board of commissions. So it's the mayor's. The mayor makes the appointment.
And that's state statute.
Yep.
So we could not override that.
But it doesn't say with the advice and consent of council.
The statute doesn't say that. The ordinance does.
Ordinance says that.
But the statute doesn't refer to our particular special form of government that they came up with, the Faulkner Act, you know, mayor-council. So our mayor is, in effect, different than the councils that this statute refers to. So that's a legal point that could be argued.
That is true.
That's why we have...
And is it not true, Mr. Cushing, that you can add to, as long as you include the state statute? For instance, as their ordinance had stated prior, they said with the approval of council. So So could not that also say...
It's in the ordinance, that's the way it says in the ordinance.
Right, and what I'm saying is, could it not also say that the council would want the full, all full names that were submitted?
Well, it's a practical matter. When you have a governing body, you got a mayor, right, it's the chief executive officer. So normally, the process, and this is the process for many things, not all things, is to have the mayor present the names, and they're either approved or they're not approved, you know? And that's sort of the democratic process. You don't like that the mayor appoints, you vote for somebody else for mayor when it comes up. Not to be cavalier about it, but that's kind of the way government works.
But there is a particular problem that we have now, because there's so many vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, even on the committee that we have now, there's vacancies, so...
Well, there's two, and they're going to be filled tonight, but...
One of them.
Well...
And Dawn, there's no reason if you or somebody else can't, if you want to be appointed, or say somebody, you know somebody who wants to be appointed, come before the council and say, hey, by the way, for this particular appointment, I think Mr. X, Ms. X is a perfect choice. I think they should...
That has happened.
Right.
That has happened.
Right.
And what has happened is politics played, and the individual was not given that right because politics played into it, and the mayor went back to, well, the ordinance says I get to do this. It's not right. What I'm telling you is it's not right. If there are people that want to serve, then all of council should be able to see all the names that want to serve, not just the mayor's political choices.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tom.
Mr. Feldman?
I don't need to get up on this thing.
Yes, you do. Please, come up to the microphone.
Mr. Feldman, 19 Foster Way. Mr. Well, could you please read that first section again?
It was under the powers and duties of the director.
Time out. Thank you. The director. You are giving the director the power to spend money. That power belongs to the commission, not to the director. The director serves at the will and the desire of the commission because they're the ones that are going to be hiring them. Power is misplaced. It belongs in the commission's hands. They're responsible for the money, not the director.
Wait, excuse me, Mr. Feldman. Can you just repeat it? You went kind of fast, and I just didn't catch that where you're going. So you say under what part now?
Patrick, what was it?
Yes, it was Robert, last page, 3-55.8, powers and duties of the director,
okay.
Letter E.
All right.
That's what I read.
The commission is responsible for recreation and for spending the money within the recreation budget per the town's ordinance plus state ordinance, whatever. The director is not responsible. The commission is responsible. The commission is responsible through usually the chairperson, the treasurer, and the other members. They're the ones that should allocate monies as needed, not the director. The director works for the commission. He is hired by the commission. He can be fired by the commission. Okay, he can make requests to the commission, but it's the commission ultimately that's responsible for those monies. And as such, that section should be changed.
With all due respect to Rick, I don't read that as being inconsistent with what Rick said. I think Rick is essentially correct. The director responds to the board in the same way this manager responds to you folks. And he spends, you know, he administers and expends departmental funds in accordance with the budget appropriation and ordinances and the financial procedures established by the manager. So what he's doing is there are authorizations in the budget to spend money, okay, buy a new pump. So that's in the budget. There's obviously discussions between the director and the board as to whether and when the pump gets bought. The board obviously approves that and authorizes the expenditure, and then the pump is bought. If the director, and Rick is right, the director goes out and spends money without the authority, you're not going to have a job. Just like this manager would get sacked if he did things that were contrary to the budget or your directions. So I hear what Rick is saying. I respect his opinions. But I don't think the language violates what Rick described as the relationship between the director and we discussed this in the past, this exact question, but yeah. So I don't think it's a real problem.
But if that was changed, that would give all commissioners the authority to purchase, so you could have the whole commissioners making purchases?
Well, no, it doesn't give them the discretion.
No, I'm saying if it was changed.
No, he's.
No.
Pat's point is.
Actually.
Managerial.
Sorry, I got it now.
Actually, you can solidify, I think, Mr. Feldman's argument by just adding on to the end of E, a semicolon, and approved by the board. So therefore, it's still the same, except for it's very clear then that these things have to just be approved by the board. They have.
Could this all be done in their bylaws? This does leave the option for them to have the bylaws. Such language could be put in the bylaws if they choose.
That's true too.
Yeah.
So we could leave the ordinance and then leave it up to them in their bylaws to decide that and to solidify it. Yeah, because it is pretty much that way. And that's the way that I would think, that, I think Mr. Cushing is right. It is that way. I mean, no matter what, they still have to, the board will have pretty much the final say because they have the power to hire and fire as individuals. So.
Right. Anyone else from the public? Hearing none, I'd accept the motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Any abstentions? Okay. Now the motion to adopt.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? May I have a roll call, please?
Valentine?
Yes.
Hagan?
Yes. I did second. Yes.
Sorry. Flores?
Yeah, yes.
Leva?
No.
Jewell?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Coy? Yes.
Now we move on to our reports.
We need to file a report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion on any of the reports?
Yeah, I would like to talk about the road department.
Okay, the DPW report?
Yeah. We'll do that after we
okay.
We're gonna talk about it now. I have questions too.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Mr. Higgins?
Okay, on their report, there's one, two, three, four paragraphs up from the bottom. It says one man was assigned to Barrett Memorial Field to help Park install a drain pipe. Was that engineered?
I'm
and
sorry?
Where did we get the drain pipe?
The drain pipe and stone was donated, and the person that was in, that was assigned to was an employee, seasonal employee that's assigned to the park.
My question was the drainage done right?
Yes, it was. The engineer.
Is it that one man was assigned to put in a drain pipe?
Again, this is their report. You're asking me if it was engineered. The information was run by the borough engineer.
It was.
And he had no issue with what we were doing.
So, I mean, they had the right pitch and somebody went out there and did the grade, shot the grade?
I don't know if they shot the grade.
Well,
but it was pretty,
I mean,
the work that was being done.
Had to be
yes, I did.
Yeah.
You did? You did? Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else, Mr. Higgins?
Nope.
Mr. Jewell?
Two things. The paragraph above that, actually two paragraphs above that, was page one man was assigned to mowing his town property. The two men were assigned to mowing the abandoned properties located throughout the borough, which includes town and quarters, 160 through 62 Belvedere Avenue, 329 Belvedere Avenue, and 411 Plenty Trail. Are they going to be mowing the embankment on the park on the 31? I don't know if that was not done. I don't know if the park takes care of that. I had sent an email to the next time they had towards the meeting, the New York Creation meeting, bring that up. Otherwise, I have no problem doing it myself. My lead whacker just don't want to step on those or get in trouble.
Typically,
I'd like to make the park look nice, not like a hay bale in the field.
I agree. typically the seasonal employee that's assigned to the park is the one that maintains it.
Okay.
This year, through no fault of his own, we just had him running around doing other things, so we got a little lax on that side.
Okay. Last time, Pat and I were actually going to do it and take care of it the day before, so. Second question was something like the last sentence, I'm not going to read the whole thing, the last paragraph, or something like old. What about the parking spot spacing lines? Are they going to do that as well? That hasn't been done in a long time.
Where?
On Belvedere and Broad Street. I know the state takes care of Washington Avenue. If we could ask the state to do that, to make it more visible?
I spoke with them last week, actually. 2 years ago, the mayor and council submitted a road restriping plan to the state.
Right.
We can't restripe it until we get their approval.
Right.
They haven't given us our approval. When I spoke with them 3 weeks ago, they contacted me because they said, oh, well, a sign that was previously there before the streetscape needs to be reinstalled. I said, well, if you're asking me to reinstall it, what happens if a week, a month later, you decide to approve our plans, which have that sign relocated? I don't want to spend money twice. I've tried to give them the sense of urgency, saying, look, just approve or deny our plan. If you're going to deny it, I can restripe what's there and put everything back. If you're going to approve it, I can redo everything once. The gentleman's name is on a post-it on my computer. I call him at least once a week.
Okay.
I think he's just avoiding.
What sign are you speaking of?
It was a loading zone sign.
Okay.
In front of, by the pharmacy there.
You want to move to where?
No. I think it's the restriping plan has it relocated just in a different spot. And we need the state to, I mean, it's only a few feet either way.
Absolutely.
And whenever you, it's minor stuff, but I just don't want to do it twice.
I know.
So.
Absolutely. I don't understand
what their exact words to me were, restriping a few hundred yards of Route 57 wasn't their priority. That wasn't my response, so a little, you know.
Did you get in contact with the supervisor?
No, I worked it up the chain, and it's been escalated.
Okay.
I actually said I'll remember that next time you ask to use our conference room.
Right.
Anything else, Mr. Jewell?
That's it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any other comments on the reports?
Just to clarify, we are going to strike spots that are existing on Broad and Belvedere right now?
If we strike them on Broad and Belvedere, it's slightly different than our plan going to the state. So we'd have to, if the state approves it, we're going to have to rip up what's there and restripe it anyway.
Well,
so unfortunately, it's kind of in limbo right now until we get their approval.
Well, on Broad and Belvedere, that's going to affect the Vaughan Avenue?
Well, just at the, well, the intersection at, was it last year that the state redid it for the fire truck? Or the year before?
It was this year.
What?
Yeah,
okay.
Anyway.
That's right. We requested it last year.
Yeah.
And then they restriped Broad and Belvedere for to account for the fire truck.
I'm talking parking spots.
Oh, no. Parking spots are us once they approve it. I don't want paying them to find out they approve the new plan, and then we have to take them up and redo it.
But on Broad and Belvedere, that includes the parking spots?
Yeah. Okay. It went 57 and then just up a little bit on both sides.
Okay. Thank you.
It was part of that. They called, I think it was called the Downtown Redevelopment Striping Plan.
Okay. Thank you.
And when was that done?
I apologize?
And when was that approved? That
it wasn't approved. It was submitted to the state just when I began here.
Oh, I see.
So they still haven't approved it.
You going to follow up with them? Right?
I spoke with them last week.
Committee reports. Mrs. Gleva, we have you on the list for a recreation liaison.
Yeah, I don't have a lot. Councilman Jewell had requested the cost to have a new sign put on the Route 31 side, and I provided him with a quote to solicit donations if he's able to. And then also you inquired about hosting the National Night Out, and it was, I wasn't at the meeting that it was discussed at, but it was discussed, and they're not going to pursue it right now. They had numerous concerns such as parking, the field maintenance, and costs, and they're still trying to get all of the programs self-funded. So. So not for next year, but it's not like it's a closed item, they're not going to, they did discuss it. And then you, Councilman Higgins had the question on the keys, but I think between the manager and I think we...
Yeah, I saw that. And the lights were only on at 5:30 because they would be in test.
The system test.
Thank you,
they can only go on, there's a whole set schedule now, and it's only done through Christine and...
Christina
and the manager can do it. And,
there's three people that have access to it.
Three people have access to it. And now they're going to be able to have the schedule report, and then they're going to be able to compare the JCP&L report to see what programs are using it when. You know, the two reports should match up, and to get the costs associated with it also for each program.
Well, yeah, we know the cost of running the lights. We don't know how much of each organization uses.
Right, for each program. Yeah. Right, so now they're going to be able to sync that up. But the important thing is only they're turned on remotely, and only three people are allowed to do that.
The remote can't be overridden?
Nope.
Somebody's
got to
do that every night.
No, you set up a schedule.
It's a schedule.
Based on the schedules that the programs give us, where we need the fields, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 7 to 9, that's when we set the schedule.
Okay.
It goes
on. Are they on a timer then to go off?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You set the on time
and
the off time?
Yeah, the on time is only between 7:30 to 8:30. Well,
and if they cancel, they call their liaison, and we can log in remotely and immediately turn them off for tonight.
So it's by a computer?
Yep.
Yep.
We have a log of whoever does well when they do it.
That's all I have.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Any other committee reports? All right. Takes us into new business. An approval of an ABC license for the Knights of Columbus. Can we do that in the raffle together?
Yes.
Okay.
And the raffle for the Washington Women's Club.
That's what I was going to do next.
That's okay.
And we also have, Christine has two raffles for the Washington's Women's Club. Everything's in order?
Yes, ma'am.
So I would move, accept a motion to approve the ABC license for the Knights of Columbus and the raffle applications, two for the Women's Club, one for the Knights of Columbus.
Right.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I would like to abstain from the night.
Okay. Next up, we have a block party request for Harding Drive from Dawn Higgins.
Okay. I apologize.
Go ahead.
I respectfully request that you agenda there. We sadly have had some things happen within our block and didn't think it was appropriate to have a block party, so we're not going to do so this year, but we appreciate putting it on our agenda and considering us. So next year.
Okay. Next we have a resolution 151-2011. I'm sorry, we have approval of the new fire department member, Charles Dorn. They ran together on me there.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I abstain.
Now we have resolution 151-2011. Execute an application, a grant with MGOT and JMUT.
This is for Green, correct?
Yes.
Yes, second.
Okay, so we have the motion and the second. Any discussion on this one?
I'd like the mayor. I went to the Green Street Road. We were talking about drainage on that road. I went there during our meeting or afterwards. That road looks in good shape. And I just want to argue a little bit with the engineering spining on why that road needs to go this route. I'm just not quite sure I understand indeed.
There's actually no storm drains on that road either. The pitch, if you recall many years ago as part of the Belvedere Avenue Phase 2 project that never came to fruition, part of that project was Belvedere and Green Street. So at the time, the borough contacted the water company and said, hey, we're doing this project, why don't you replace your water lines? You know, perfect time to replace the water lines is before a road project. They replaced the water lines. As you can see, some people call it the washboard, if you will, on Belvedere. They did a patch on Green Street, same kind of manner, a longer patch, but a patch nonetheless. And what's been happening is, in this instance, the water, the way it's pitched, is pooling at the foot of everyone's driveway there because there's no storm drains. The problem with the DOT grant this year is it's twofold. It's their requirements for road and drainage improvements versus a municipal budget. Green Street's the only one that we could apply for that meets DOT requirements without expending public funds to complete the project if we get it. I agree with you. There are other roads that may be in physical disrepair to a greater extent than Green Street. But if we apply for that road the borough council will need to bond money because it's more than the DOT grant will fund. Like, as an example, Veneta Street. Everyone knows Veneta Street is a rough street to drive now. DOT only issues a max of $150,000. I would argue that the condition of Veneta Street is worse than the condition of Green Street, but I can't get Veneta Street done for $150,000, which is the max that DOT issues. I could get Green Street done.
How about South Lincoln Avenue?
Or even we were talking about Marble Street, Gardner's Court. But we, how did, we came up with Green Street because of the phase two, phase one of...
No. That, I'm just explaining to you some of the rationale behind the engineer's requirement.
But why did Green Street get picked?
Green Street got picked based on the current DOT requirements for funding. That was the only road. There were other roads that were eligible, but the governing body would have to borrow more than the grant.
This isn't going to be a complete reconstruction. This is going to be an overlay.
This is going to be a mill and pave, curbing, and some drainage work.
And that for $150,000?
Yes.
Is that going to include Side Street that comes off that to the right?
No, this is just Green.
Yes, what is the pedestrian walkway improvement? Is that just part of the title, sidewalk?
That, where are you looking? Just so I'm on, you're looking at the resolution?
Pedestrian walkway improvement project.
Yeah, because some of the curbing and some of the sidewalk that's destroyed needs to be replaced. Typically, municipalities, when they do road projects, is when they make the repairs to curbing and sidewalks. I agree with you. There are roads that are in worse shape than this road.
So I just have a question in general. If there is sidewalks that are private property, of course, at that time, and they are in need of repair, say they're the old slates, and they just shifted over time, one is up like this one, it's a very dangerous situation, you know, and maybe other areas, you know, across the town. So how would this, a grant, you know, take care of this?
Well, no. When you apply for a grant with the DOT, it's road specific. I can't
say I want to
replace damaged sidewalk throughout the borough.
Okay, so say on Green Street it happened to have old slates, it doesn't.
Then we would have included that in the grant application.
And it would have been?
Yes.
And it would have been, okay,
and there's
great.
Some damaged sections of the sidewalk now that would be included.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
So Rich is saying this shouldn't be any more than $150,000 to do this and it'll be covered. We put an NTE, which is not to exceed, so that it doesn't go over that.
Well, remember, you have to go out to bid. You have to go out to bid for it. So you're bound by what the numbers come in. Same thing with Beethoven. I mean, we got a $140,000 grant for Beethoven now, and we're making the engineering and the road work fit under 140. Mm-hmm. Because the bottom line is the CFO can't certify more than 140. You can only certify what you have. So if we get 150 and the project comes in at 300, we don't move forward with the project. You can only do what the grant allows, the grant funds.
I remember seeing this in an email. Somebody asked me questions about that. The engineering costs are going to be included in this grant. It hasn't been engineered yet.
No.
So the engineering cost, that was it 2,500? Is that the number I saw? Or was that 2,500 or something? Anyway, and then that's the point of my question. If the engineering is $15,000, we're down to $135,000 to have that done, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have the sidewalks, curving, milled and repaved.
Yep.
And storm sewer.
No, and when drainage. They're
fix the road,
yeah.
Fix the road.
Yeah, they're not installing storm drains.
Backyard.
No, they're going to pitch it correctly to hit the right drains that are on the road. There's two at the bottom. No, I mean, it's no different than what we did with Belvedere. Nothing different. It's the same thing. If council doesn't pass the resolution tonight, there's no roads we can apply for in this round of funding.
Well,
and that's fine. That's your discretion.
As long as it doesn't exceed $150,000,
it can't. It can't, because when the money comes in, the CFO can legally only certify what we have.
I understand. But the engineer is going to give a
scope of services resolution.
About.
Well, that's what scope of services
is. It's not going to go after the engineer. Some of his engineering. So we're talking $150,000. We're not talking
No, $150,000 is the whole project.
Right. So he hasn't even given us an estimate of what's
going to
cost us.
I don't recall that I sent it to the streets committee. We were using it as an estimate, like through the Morris County Co-op.
Yeah.
You can get roughly a mile of road milled and paved to 2 inches for $100,000.
Right. That's the spec.
And that's just a mill and pave.
4 inches to compress.
Right. And this is not a mile of road. So we're well within the cost of asphalt, and we're well within the cost for the work to get done.
Usually, so that'll be in the bid that we will provide the material.
It could be. If at the time the price through the various co-ops presents the most advantageous method, that's where we go.
Here's the question I have for you, is that with Bellevue Avenue, we gave $150,000 back to the state. We got the grant to refinish, $150,000. It was going to cost $1.5 million to do. My question is, if you use any amount of that grant, you're responsible to either use it or pay the entire amount back.
Say that one more time, I couldn't hear.
If you use any of the grant money,
right,
and then you decide, oh, God, we can't figure this, we're going to have to subsidize it with some kind of
bonding
money, yeah, or tax dollars. So what happens when nobody bids on it?
Nobody bid on the Belvedere Avenue one. We have to go back out again.
Okay, but we're using...
We're using
that grant to pay our engineer.
Correct.
So if nobody bids on it, we go back out again. Nobody bids on it again, and we go back out on it. We have to use that grant money within a certain amount of time.
I think you have 2 years.
Actually, we have to let them know within a year of receiving it if we were going to use it. So I would say a year. So what happens then? We have to pay the entire grant back?
No.
So that, what guarantee do we have? We don't have a guarantee.
There's no guarantee. Of course not. You won't know what the bids come in until they come in. But if you go out to, in your scenario, if you go out to bid twice and get no bids, or get bids that substantially exceed your budgetary allotment, you can decline the bids, or if you get no bids after two times, you can negotiate with someone. The reality of it is the work on Beethoven Ave is a little bit different than what the Morris County Co-op provides, but for a basic mill and pave, the Morris County Co-op can provide something that will repair Green Street for well under that cost. That's a mill and pave.
The other kind of go out to bid.
Not Morris County Co-op does not. That has to be approved by the Borough Council via resolution.
The only concern I have is you sent an email about a lot of the companies being out for emergency service repairs now. What if we don't get any bids back due to a lot of the companies being tied up?
I mean, if you think like that, you can never go out to bid for anything. I mean, you have to go out to bid and see who bids. If no one bids, you take the next step.
And you're coming close to the end of the asphalt season, too.
Well, that's it. We're going back out to bid over the winter for the spring paper Beethoven now, because there's not enough time before the plants close to get this project done properly. And I don't think it's right to start a project, let it sit there all winter, and finish it in the spring, because that's where something happens over the winter and you get hit with change orders in the spring. So we're going to go out to bid over the winter so all of the construction companies can plan for spring paving.
I have a question
for Beethoven.
Kind of tying into Councilman Higgins. For the Beethoven or even the Green Street, for him to have determined Green Street is the one to choose, how much did he charge us for that? And then are we taking that money from the grant? And then what happens if we can't do the project?
To answer your question, we pay for Andrew's services now for grant application. We can seek reimbursement as part of the money we get from the grant to offset those costs. There's no guarantee on any construction project that it's going to come in under budget. Andrew knows what our requirements are. It's no different than Beethoven. What if we went out to Beethoven and last week and got bids over $500,000?
So I guess that's Councilman Higgins' question to some way. What are the costs that Andrew is charging us to do to determine like these projects and to do the grant application when...
No, that's the grant.
And does the grant money cover his expenses? That's what you're after.
We can't use that money then. So then where's taxpayer dollars are paying for the engineer?
Yeah, back then.
We have to pay. No. So I guess the question is, how much is the engineering services for?
Andrew has to design the bid specifications. We're eligible. If we move forward with the project, the cost gets reimbursed as part of the grant. If we don't move forward with the project, it's like anything else. It comes out of the general engineering account. I mean, you're too far along in Beethoven to not go forward with it at this point.
Well, no, but we're talking about Green Street now.
Nothing with Green Street is any different than Beethoven. The same risks associated with Green.
The road in Beethoven is not the same road in...
No. I'm talking... correct. Bad choice of words. I'm talking procedurally.
Okay.
There's no difference.
But engineering cost-wise, it's the same as Beethoven.
Yeah, right. It's the same risk.
It's the same
risk.
Look, if you, and there's risk with any...
I guess it would be helpful to know what, yeah, how much that money we could lose.
I mean, with...
Can you set an estimate of what you think?
Well, I mean, with Beethoven, he provided it last year. We got $140,000 grant. Engineering and construction oversight will probably...
And grant application, and...
Yeah, it'll probably roughly, I'm just going off the top of my head because it's downstairs, represents about 20%. The other 80% pays for the construction.
20%?
20% of 100, and the 1,000-foot road?
Again, I said, I'm going off the top of my head, don't hold me to 20, I'm just throwing a number out. But that's typical of any construction project. If council doesn't want to take the risk, we just don't pass the resolution, don't apply for the grant, then there's no stress. We just can't apply for any roadwork this year. This is in coordination, in conjunction with your mandate from last year. I mean, if you want to change a policy, we'll change the policy, that's fine.
I think what normally you would expect is a lot of Green Street talk up prior to this, then you would then prepare. I mean, Green Street just came out about we're doing this grant application. And I didn't realize there was any problems with Green Street. It just seemed that, you did your diligence, I understand that. But there's going to be maybe more pre-information prior to coming up to this thing. Because we talked for years about Gardner's Court, nothing's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Green Street, well, here we go.
Again, the only reason we selected Green Street, and the only reason council and the streets committee wasn't involved is I was following the mandate that you instructed me with last year.
Not even talking about that.
You know, that's the only reason.
So you got a mandate last year from the SOAR committee?
No, not
from
the SOAR
council.
No, council, apply for as much funding as you can and try and get as many road projects done with grant funding without an expense to the taxpayer.
Okay.
I mean, that was just part of my day-to-day duties working with the engineer. We made the selection and we went forward.
And how did you pick Green Street?
Again, only road in town that met the requirements of the DOT grant that could be completed design, engineering, and construction for under the maximum amount if awarded by.
And among the streets that you considered was Gardner's Court too, or no?
No, because it could not get done for under the maximum amount that the DOT gave.
Yeah.
DOT only gives a max of $150,000.
Got it.
Anything else? Let's have a roll call on this, please.
Valentine?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Leyva?
Yes.
Higgins?
No.
Boyle?
No.
Shore?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes. We've got a bunch. We've got two refund overpayments, 152 and 153. How about if we do those together?
So moved.
Second. Okay, any discussion on these? Roll call, please.
Higgins?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yep.
Leyva?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Okay, we have labor liens for 154, 155, 156, and 157.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on any of these?
Okay, now, these are all abandoned properties. Are these liens going to the mortgage holder? Are they going to the registered property owner?
You can only give it to the registered property owner. If the bank owns it and there's no registered property owner and the bank is the registered property owner, that's who it goes to. You're only allowed to assign the lien to the legal property owner, regardless of whether they have a mortgage on the property or not.
Okay, so when the bank then goes to sell it, they have to satisfy it.
That's correct.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Valentine?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes.
Leyva?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
Okay, 158, 2011, an agreement with the Morris County Co-op.
There's a little explanation.
Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'll second that.
Okay. Will you give a little explanation?
Sure. According to state law, every 5 years, any cooperative pricing agency, whether it be Warren County Co-op, Mars, Somerset, etc., has to get all of their members to pass this resolution and extend it. This here will allow the borough to continue as a member of the Mars County Cooperative Purchasing Council for the next 5 years. At any time, we can leave. This just allows us to continue to participate. Next year, if you don't want to participate, you can leave. So you're not stuck.
Page 2, item number 3, we are paying to be in this council $1,200.
Every year, correct.
So we're going to get our $1,200 back by using this service.
Correct. This year, we paid it, and we've made many purchases off of it. And I can honestly say we've reaped more than $1,200 in savings.
So the one stated, like, if we want to get out of it, that only comes through council approval.
Correct. Council can make a motion to remove it, and then what happens is when they submit the annual invoice for membership, we politely decline.
Are we going to take advantage of the early payment?
Yeah, that's my other question, too. To get the discount.
We just, well, no, we just paid it. A few months, well, you know, I think we just paid it for 2011. I think we just paid it for 2011. But no, tomorrow this is on my to-do list to file it and get it through.
I was going through the list here of what they offer. And I'm assuming number two is fuel oil, actually heating. They do offer diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would it be feasible to go with them to get our diesel and then would be to go to the vendor we currently go to downtown?
We don't have a tank. The diesel gets provided to municipalities with storage tanks, diesel and gas tanks.
So
on
you look into, I know it's not part of this, I'll ask for it up again. Yeah, don't worry about it again. Justin made the motion on this, but can I'd like to go for that reduced amount so we know that that's what we're going to spend. I already sent my motion. Well, I don't know.
You don't have to rescind it. All you have to do is the maker and the seconder simply have to consent for the amendment.
Okay. Yeah.
As offered by Mr. Boyle.
For the $1,100 for the early bird special.
Yes, on page two, number three.
It have to be over 65.
You should know.
Man, he didn't hesitate for a second. Have to be over 50. You got that?
I know about that. Come on.
Now, if I may, the only thing I need to check is this is referring to the next year. I just need to make sure the funds are available in this year for that. Because this year we budgeted the 2011 fee. This is the first year that they've offered a reduced fee. Mm-hmm. Typically we get it in January for the current year. So they're offering an early payment, so I just need to verify that we have funds to pay it. But if we do, I'll process it right away.
I had a question. I mean, I'm all for the co-op, and I've mentioned this when I first started here. Is there any way you can include some sort of identifier on the purchase on our voucher list that will show us that you got this through that co-op?
Rubber stamp it, MCCPC.
I would like to know which purchases we are actually getting the discount for.
I don't think we can do it through the voucher system, but in the requisition side of it, when people enter it, there is a box that says, you know, contract number. So if it's Morris County State contract, they put that number in there. I don't know if you can run a query like that, and I know you can't put it on the voucher list. Like, because a vendor is a vendor. Now, because I can buy from a vendor, vendor A could be a Morris County co-op vendor, and I can buy something that he doesn't sell on the co-op.
Right.
Even though, you know what I mean, I can buy from co-op side and non-co-op side.
So
I don't think it shows up.
Anyway, we can find out, like, what.
I mean, I can call Edmonds.
Or you can just give us a monthly report of all the MCC, whatever it is, PC.
Somebody had to manually calculate it, though.
Well,
as you
go along, you just have a checklist.
Oh, yeah, this goes in. A lot easier than said and done.
Right.
Okay, any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Cool.
Yes.
Coyle.
Yes.
Leva.
Yes.
Torres.
As amended, right? We had consent. I just want to be clear, right? Yes, then. Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
Okay, 160 and 161, 2011.
Move.
Okay, any discussion on this? Roll call, please.
Boyle?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes.
Leva?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
I have one nomination to put up for the Recreation Commission committee, which would be 162, 2011. The name is Jeffrey Haynes. Both Mrs. Yaporsky and myself have spoken to him. He's aware of the obligations and is willing to fulfill those duties.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor, real quick. Why is it that we weren't provided with the
Yeah, or the name
until
just now. It's
kind of
hard to...
Yeah, we received blank forms on our agenda. I just want to make that clear that we weren't informed, right?
Thursday, that I found out that we had some vacancies, Wednesday, Thursday,
I went through the list that I had. I just spoke with Mr. Haynes last night. You know, I allowed Mrs. Leporsky to converse with him first so she could explain what the duties are and what's expected of him, ensure that he's still interested. She assured me that he was, and then I spoke to him. He said, yes, he's willing to go. And it was last night that that I got in touch with him and found him available. I have the application right here. You're more than welcome to review it should you choose to. It has not been past practice to spread that amongst the council, but if you'd like me to in the future, I will be happy to.
It has been. We were just blocking out what the...
Yeah, for the...
We had an email, no phone number.
I don't remember ever doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm the one that requested we take off.
Okay, maybe that's why. Ms. Blanchard says she does it, so that's why I don't remember doing it.
Perhaps we can introduce this again and with the proper information so council can properly review it before we can approve it. That might be a proper...
For uniformity purposes, yeah. I would agree with that.
So you want to table it until next week?
And would this person then actually be the first person on the commission? Is that how this would work?
No. This is not a commission appointment. This is still a committee appointment. The commission does not start until January.
I seconded that motion.
It doesn't start until the state approves the dedication of the rider.
Oh,
right.
Okay. So we're going to table this anyway.
Well, yes. I second that motion. I don't know what we have to vote on.
I don't know. We don't need a motion for that.
No?
Table it.
Good. All right. How do you spell the Jeffrey's name?
What I'll do is I'll make copies of this, put it in your box.
Okay.
This evening.
All right.
There's a copy around. We'll get it tomorrow.
All right. And then there's a second one in here.
Will we do the same thing for the second one also?
They only
I don't have
one.
A name for that one right now.
Okay.
Well, hold on. At this point, I'd like to ask if anybody from the audience, maybe Dawn, you had a suggestion of another individual you wanted to possibly bring forward to the Recreation Committee now?
Well, if
on here?
I can't do that without talking to the individual. That wouldn't be personal.
Yeah,
well, maybe you could forward that to the manager right away. So this way,
well, they have to submit the application form. Once that
right.
is, you know, Christine...
But I'm clear, though. I mean, we just want to be clear. We still have how many vacancies now?
That will be all filled. If that was still...
I thought we had four members and we're still missing three?
Mm-hmm.
Or
that
no?
was my understanding, that there are three vacancies.
That's what I thought. And plus, we have alternate members, too, that aren't even picked.
Well,
right?
that would be the commission.
There's
no alternate right. members.
There's
on the committee,
committee,
it's not. Yeah. Right, you're right. I'm sorry. But right now, did there still be three vacancies? Or
yes,
no?
I understand it.
So that's what I'm saying. So then we need more names. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, could you possibly send out an email blast to let the citizens know that these vacancies are there?
We sent out a number of those. They're all available on the website for many positions.
No, I'm talking about that specifically. I get the email blast, but it
was
number one specifically
just
for that.
Yeah. We could. Last resolution is 164-2011 for the establishing of the special flood hazard. Mr. Phelan, you want to speak to that just for a second?
Certainly. The last meeting, the mayor and council introduced an ordinance relating to amending the borough's flood disaster ordinance. The state and FEMA made changes earlier this year, which required us to change our ordinance. Once we made the changes to the ordinance, we had to send it down to them for their review and approval, which took quite some time. They finally got it back to us, and based on our meeting schedule, the only way we could get it done was have an ordinance introduced and ultimately adopted on the 4th of October. That is 5 days after their required date. According to them, if we don't pass this resolution, even though they delayed the process, if we don't pass this resolution, theoretically, if something catastrophic should happen during those 5 days, the borough residents in the flood zone may not be covered. They said if you pass this resolution that says, you know, we're planning on adopting it, and if it gets adopted on the 4th, the coverage will be seamless. So in the case that there is any catastrophic event, it will be no downfall to the residents.
Someone like to move the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Vouchers. Was there a second? Sorry, was there a second?
Yes.
Any discussion on the voucher?
Yes.
Mr. Jewell, I heard you first.
Yes, I have three pages, I will get your, page three first. On the main, voucher, not the, it's Comcast, North Hudson, Jersey. I only bring this up because I know we have a grant for Comcast. Is it being taken out of the grant, $89.99? As little as it may be, it adds up.
That's the library.
Okay, is that part of that grant that we had?
No. The libraries opted not to use Comcast for their internet service.
But it says Comcast, Northwest.
I'm sorry. Correct. At the end of the year, this all gets transferred to the trust account that we had to get approval from the state to create the trust account for. We have a list down there of all the amounts that have to get transferred over.
Second thing, page seven. Last portion, at for the American Water, $5,612 a month. Have we spoken to them to see what they actually do as maintenance? I mean, I know there was some discussion when they brought them up a while back. It seems like an awful lot of money when, personally, I went out and shoveled some hydrants that were broken back in December, and they had to put them back in.
They...
It's not flushing, is it?
It's just a quarterly charge. That we get charged that amount to make sure the fire hydrants are charged in the event that they're needed.
That's a monthly charge, that.
Correct.
I also called Jersey American Water a while back, and they agreed to donate hydrants.
It's a blanket purchase order that we have like $30,000 on it that we draw down from.
Okay.
That is for June through September, so it's $5,000 times four. You're only seeing one payment off of that purchase order.
I contacted, I believe, the person in charge of our area for the American Water a while back. I haven't heard back from them probably about a good 6 months. They agreed that if you had written a letter from the borough, they would donate hybrid flags for the hydrants. So that would get a heavy snowfall, hydrants would be buried.
Do you know who you spoke with?
Whoever you gave me the number for.
Frank?
Yes, Frank.
Okay.
He never returned my call. But if you could do me a favor and possibly reach him and take him up on that offer, maybe you could write a letter to him and say, sure, we'll take that. I think we have, 92 fighters in town, I think, in our area. If we can get all of them flagged, that'd be great. I think it's much easier for the fire department to shovel them out and make it more visible. So if we do have a possible structure fire, we can get the water quickly.
Okay. I'll call them tomorrow.
Third thing I have is page 8. This is the, looks like a blown motor on the sweeper. What exactly happened?
Correct. The street sweeper has two diesel motors on it.
Okay.
One of them that drives the truck, and the other that drives the blower assembly.
Okay.
The one that drives the blower assembly blew. It had to be replaced.
What kind of preventative maintenance do you have?
Oh, it's maintained all
the time.
It's maintained. It's on a monthly maintenance schedule.
Right.
The problem, what happened is, it was a crack in the head that, a micro crack that you can't see, a normal maintenance, and it got worse, and ultimately it blew the motor.
Is there any kind of warranty on it
at all? It's from 99. Warranties are expired.
I mean,
you mean on the new one?
It's not cracked by itself, but I'm sure overuse, yeah, it has, but...
Well, not the winterizing system. I mean, it's winterized properly. The problem is street sweepers just, they suck up some nasty stuff on it, and it gets a fair share of abuse.
That's a lot of money, though.
Yes.
All right. That's the only thing I had on that.
Well, I have an add-on to that particular question that Justin had, because didn't we last time in the last vouchers for 9-6 have also sweeper repairs?
Yeah.
It was quite expensive.
There's approximately about $8,000 worth of sweeper repairs that we've had to do, the largest portion of the motor. You take the motor out and repair the motor, while it's out, you need to make the repairs to everything else that's corroded and destroyed.
So how
there's
much
no other
total money did we spend on the sweeper?
About $8,500.
In the last, say, month.
Yeah.
Now, Rich, well, I understand this Mr. Bird's letter that he borrowed the sweeper from the township. That was part of a shared service agreement, but there was no charges?
Yeah. No charges.
Okay.
No charges. In fact, there's some vouchers on here for the last remaining parts on this bill list.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mrs. Levy, you had something?
Yeah, I had a question on page 3. I'm not questioning the expense, but I'm just wondering why the pool director, paid for it. I'm assuming he paid for it out of his own pocket. Do we have, a credit card?
Sure. No, what it is there are times when we can get a better price from a vendor. for small purchases that don't accept purchase orders. On a case-by-case basis, I have the authority to authorize them to purchase it and then seek reimbursement. In this instance, the supplies he needed, he was able to get at a better price. Unfortunately, they just didn't accept purchase orders.
So the procedure is, you will have to approve that.
Oh, yeah. If they just go out and buy something without me knowing about it, they don't get reimbursed.
You're done, Mr.?
I'm done, thanks.
Yeah, I have, on page four, where we have a complete rebuilt of computer. Am I reading that right?
That's from the library, yeah.
Okay, so they spend $500, they don't buy a new computer when they have to do this?
Again, the library dictates how they spend their own money.
That was discussed, you know, I brought up, you know, should we get a new one?
Yeah.
It turned out that the rebuild was actually less expensive than the new one.
Okay. All right, and then on page six, I have a question. Down, it says carpet cleaning and stripping wax floors for the police department. So we pay for that as part of the shared services? I mean, how does that...
No. Our old police department. We're moving staff down to that office, and since it was empty, it was a perfect time to clean it.
Oh, I thought that was going to be a council office.
Council never made a decision on that.
Oh, in our discussions, you had mentioned that that's what you...
But I still have staff that I need to have office space for.
So now you don't have that
That's
space
correct.
Available any longer?
No.
Okay, so where would council's office be then?
At the beginning of when we made the mayor's office back there, that was supposed to be for the mayor and council.
Well, I'm just requesting that
no
the council have some sort of space for an office. I mean, we have piles of paperwork. We have a need for some sort of little office space. And I'm sure somewhere you could make us some sort of available space.
There's area next door in the old police department in a large common area, but it's not secured.
And if we just lost, as I understand, we just lost another employee, how is it that we now have a staffing problem where now that we need more office space than what you had told me that we were allocating to council office?
Because we have four part-timers sharing one office.
And who?
In the past, it was two part-timers sharing one office. Now we have four sharing one office. They need more space. Fire official, fire inspector, code enforcement, and zoning.
They could still use the same space.
Not if they work at the same time.
Well, that could be a problem. So that's a scheduling problem then. That's, you know, would have to be somebody above their head to schedule them properly. But I think that the management of space is something that we have to call on you for because we are in need of a council office. I'm making a formal request right now in public to get a council office for the council to use, and we don't all have to use it at the same time, so we're all part-time. We need just one little tiny office.
Can you give up a key?
Right. We'll share an office, it doesn't matter, but we need some place where we can have at least a file cabinet and a desk, okay, where we can work, and possibly a telephone hookup so when we have meetings, we can have a conference call.
As I was saying, there's room next door, but it's not secured. It's in the large common area.
I'd like to propose that we make a resolution to order the manager to provide us with some available space for a council office. Okay? Okay?
I guess can you put a lock on that, whatever you're talking about?
No,
on the
no
because we need some sort of space.
Hold up. Let's go back.
I don't propose to be.
Okay, well, then my motion would be that either you give up the key to that office to everybody here, or you don't have that office either. I'll even pay for a key so that I sweep it. what's the big deal? Change your TV channel, what?
Well, I don't care if they work it out between the manager and the mayor. However, I think that the council should have an office.
No.
The manager told me originally, yeah, we're going to take care of that. As soon as that gets cleared out in the old police department, we're going to make that the council office. That's what the words were to me from the manager. Now, that's all changed. All of a sudden, I'm hearing it now. Oh, yeah, well.
But staff has changed.
Do you want the area to be secure? Or can you take, or will you accept a cubicle type of area?
Well, if I have council public documents in there, it could be unsecured. So that's fine.
Okay, so we've made that offer, manager made that offer.
Right.
If we can make that happen.
But.
For council.
I can't speak for all the council.
Well, I'm just asking you right at the moment.
Right, okay.
You know, it can go out to the council further than that, you're the one who's.
Right, okay.
Championing this, I guess would be the proper term, so you're comfortable with it being an unsecured area?
If that's all that is available.
And what are you looking for, a desk, a computer, a filing cabinet?
I explained it, there should be at least a file cabinet, a desk, and a telephone access.
And a telephone, okay.
I think that when Dave brought up, it was fine, I think, you know, if you get a key, I'll even make the keys, I'll pay for it, doesn't matter. I don't want any more money spent for desks or computers, as long as we've got somewhere we can work and.
Well, we have the available desks and computers, and file cabinets, according to the manager. So we have that, I mean, that is available. So, what are you proposing, Justin?
I think, you know, whatever Dave said, if you get a key to Scott's room, I'm quite happy with that.
No, it's not actually Scott's room, well, it's the mayor and council room that we designated.
Well, then, that's fine too.
It's secure, you got documents that are sensitive, you can be locked up, it can be locked up.
Right.
I think that's all of that.
Okay, so, anybody second my res.
I think we can all share, all adults, grown-ups.
I mean, yeah.
What's your motion, Mr. Torres?
Well, I think I'm gonna second Dave's motion. Nobody seconded my motion. My motion was to have the manager provide some sort of space for the office, for the council. But Mr. Councilman Higgins, he proposed an alternate.
Did your motion come from Mr. Higgins, or Mr. Higgins' motion come first? Rob's came first, okay, let's start from there. Is there a second to Mr. Torres's motion? There is not, so your motion dies. Mr. Higgins.
You know what, do we really, I think this is kind of like ridiculous, that we're just here, so we have to make a motion to secure the key for that office. But if that's how it has to go, then that's the main motion I make, that you provide the key.
And I second that motion, so we can get out of here, because it's getting late, right.
That office be used at their discretion also. I will pay for the keys.
So, second the motion.
Okay.
Is there any other discussion?
I just don't understand, all of a sudden, a need for an office. Does anybody, really, do we really need an office? I don't know, I just think it's a big issue, it's worth discussing. I just can't understand why all of a sudden we're so concerned about office space. We do so much work, we need office space.
No, we have so much paper.
Yes, we do.
So whatever we're gonna do, we're gonna come to the borough and want to work?
I can see the need for a desk and a computer for council members.
Okay.
If your computer at home doesn't work, you need to come in, check your emails, you wish to have a spot where you can meet with somebody that is in the municipal building where the conference room perhaps isn't suitable, you know, I can understand that need, and I can understand that desire. That's basically why I wanted the mayor's office, so that I can meet with citizens, I can meet with dignitaries, if Assemblyman DeMeo or Peterson come up here, that we can sit down and have a private place to converse. You know, that I can make phone calls from, because I make a lot of phone calls to various areas. I need to talk with the governor's office.
Okay, but are we gonna vote on this motion, because it's getting late?
Well, I thought I'd have the chance to have my say. You know, that's why I have my office. You know, if you look around many of the communities here, the mayor also has an office. So.
And the other communities, they're not in our form of government either.
Well, I mean, that's neither here nor there, when you get right down to it. You know, the chief executive is the chief executive, no matter what form of government it is, no matter what business it is. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Any abstaining?
I'm abstaining.
I'm sorry, Mr. Valentine and Mrs. Gleba abstain. Okay.
Thank you.
Did we ever vote on the vouchers?
No.
Okay. Is there anything else on the vouchers? Roll call on the vouchers, please.
Valentine?
Yes.
Foyle?
Yes.
Higgins?
Yes.
Gleba?
Yes, abstain from Canelli, page 4 and 5.
Oh, yeah, I have to abstain on anything from the fire department. Yes, if anything is seen, I abstain from the fire department and the squad.
Torres?
Yes.
Gonzalez?
Yes. Mr. Phelan, your recap.
excuse me. We'll get a minimum of 5 qualified candidates for tax assessor with the special meetings scheduled for the 27th, 29th, and 7th. Reach out to Norfolk Southern to see if there's any chance of them granting us a sewer easement that would also allow us to provide snow removal. I will have the engineer check into the storm water issues on McKinley Avenue, as well as the storm water issue, storm drain issue on Verizon's property. For Councilman Boyle, I'll check with Violi on the status of the manhole insert project. And move forward with applying for a renewal for the Morris County Co-op early with the savings, should funds allow it, in the 2011 budget.
New Jersey American Water is in that contract.
Yeah, but I didn't categorize that as my recap, but yes.
Council remarks. Mr. Valentine. Mr. Torres.
I should have said this maybe in the audience portion, but I'd like to just announce that I'm opening an antique store in town. So, you know, if you can move that, Christine, to the proper place, you know, I don't want to be out of, thank you.
You don't have an office in there?
It's 16 Broad Street. I don't have an office in there, no. But
sorry,
thanks for questioning. Right.
Mrs. Lee, are you finished?
I did have another thing to say. I just hope that we can somehow, I know that we had an emergency this time with the flooding with Irene and the flood after that. And, you know, I know that the manager did a good job by putting, you know, this in the, I guess it was on the email. Right?
You know,
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Your
the special bulk.
The special bulk pickup for the.
It was in the paper, Comcast website, email, and library, bid office, borough hall.
Did you put it in the newspaper?
Yes.
Okay.
There was an article in the newspaper the Thursday prior to the event.
An article?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'm saying is, there's a lot of people that still were in town that told me that they didn't hear anything about it. And I said, so I was just only going to suggest possibly putting on a letter board as well. You know, anytime there's this emergency, something like that, and maybe if there's some sort of other possible contact ways we could look into.
What about the public access?
We put it on there too.
Did you?
Okay, so, right, that would lead into it. Janine is probably going to talk about, you know, further contact, like a network situation. That's all I was talking about. So, that's a
All right, I have a couple of things. I'll try and make it quick. It was in the minutes of August 16th, and it was supposed to be on the agenda, a resolution for the sale of the goalposts. So I'm going to make a motion that we open up the further discussion. I mean, I don't even think I think I need a resolution number to have it actually.
You said you wanted to discuss it, and you asked them to bring the information. That's how I understood your email.
Well, in the minutes, though, I wanted it as a resolution. It actually says in the minutes that were approved tonight that it would be on the next sale. But it's neither here nor there. We're doing it now. I'd like to make a motion for the discussion. Does anyone have any further? Well, second the motion. Make a motion to.
Second.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any? We provided all the information that was asked to sell the goalposts, and the manager gave this depreciation value or a suggestion to donate the goalposts. So I'd like to make a motion that we sell the goalposts.
We have to.
Eventually, it's going to have to be a resolution for the bid and all that, but I think we have to have a formal.
Hold on. I thought the last discussion was that it was pointed out, and especially because it came to my attention by a concerned citizen about these goalposts. Were the soccer goals, rather, was that they could be used for other sports, and the rec committee was going to look into using them for field hockey, street hockey, and other things that they can use these nets and goals for.
I sent the information. I sent the rec. Beth Eporsky, I emailed you. I sent you her response.
Okay. Well, I didn't get to, because my computer was down, so I couldn't get to it, so I'm sorry about that, but I didn't post, could you fill me in?
Let me see, I'm gonna read it, I'm gonna read it right from it.
Yeah, I remember you reading it.
I got the email, you're, plus he's a liaison, and she would know firsthand.
Okay.
I'm satisfied.
They don't have another use. The goalposts were purchased by former director Gary Mazner with the thought that the borough could host a recreational football team, and the goals could also be used for soccer. The committee was not consulted or advised until after the purchase was made. The Redskins are already an established youth football organization. I'm sorry, my email, my printer got cut off. But they play on established football fields in the area. The goals are far too large for either field hockey or soccer. Both field hockey and soccer have portable goals. And then she went into where they were, because it was the question of where they were.
Who told her that those goals are too large for that? Because I was told that the reason that they won't work for soccer is they're too small for soccer.
Well, they already have portable goals for soccer and field hockey. The point is the recreation committee came back and said they do not have a need for
it. So, in any event, the recreation committee doesn't have anything. So the bottom line is, again, we're going to be selling something that we used maybe once, and that's my big complaint about it, but, you know, if we have no other use for them.
I have seen portable soccer goals and field hockey, but we set up landing zones all the time for our park, so that I've seen them there. So, I mean, they have those already, so there's really no need for the football.
Right.
Portable goal.
Okay.
I know they were purchased for $2,500.
Right, and based on the current condition and depreciation, the manager feels the fair value of the item would be $1,200 to $1,400. He feels, though, that it will never sell for that amount. We'd be lucky to get $750.
Right. We'll be lucky to get $500. What?
I'm gonna. Wait a minute. You have a motion.
Yeah, we've got a couple motions.
He seconded it.
So
we need to approve that motion.
I'm just so frustrated. This thing has been going on for 2 months.
Reiterate the motion that we're going to be discussing here, please.
All you got to do is yes or no. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
She made the motion to just have it open for discussion.
Right. Okay. So we've discussed ahead of the.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Okay. And then she made the motion that we go forward with the sale.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I don't know.
Second. We got it.
For a minimum bid price?
Minimum bid price,
yeah.
500?
That would be fine with me. At least that's something. What do we think, Mr. Manager? We think we could get that? You made our estimate at 750.
I said you'd be lucky to get 750.
Okay. Well,
I mean, you can start the minimum bid at 500 and hope for the best.
Okay.
Hey, well. Can these things be entered into the co-op? I mean, for sale?
Well, what I do is on the League of Municipalities, if you sell it to another governmental entity, well, that's the other thing, too. If you sell it to a governmental entity, one statute dictates. If you sell it for public auction, another one dictates.
Okay,
so it depends on which route council wants to go, because there's two different resolutions that might have to get passed.
Well, where do you think we'd have a better chance of...
I mean, one, if that's
public,
the case,
public,
you can make a motion. Well, private sports organizations would have to bid on it. Governmental entities, schools, another municipality, et cetera, wouldn't. If council wants, they can make a motion to explore, you know, contact the other municipalities, and if there's no response, I could place it for sale via public auction with a minimum bid of $5,000.
I'm thinking they're 13.
Never happened.
It could be a two-pronged motion, for lack of a phrase. If I can't get any municipal governmental entity who's interested, on the next agenda I can have one for regular sale of surplus items to the public. This way you can explore. And then if I am successful in finding someone who's interested, I can just have the proper resolution placed before the government.
All right, that's a good idea.
That's all.
Because there's two different resolutions depending on the path you go to.
Okay, so we have an amended motion now?
Right.
John, you're okay with the second?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion?
And how much did we decide?
$500 minimum bid.
Huh? I'm thinking 13.
That's a minimum bid.
Right.
Read back the amended motion for us, please. Do you have it?
Not really.
Okay.
I have $500 down.
And please correct me if I'm wrong, the motion made by Councilwoman Gleba was for the manager to explore the option of selling it to another municipality, and if I'm eligible, if I'm successful in getting another municipality at the minimum bidding price to purchase it, that resolution will get presented on the 4th. If I'm not successful in the next week or 10 days, to have the regular resolution for sale of surplus items.
Right.
But I think now everyone has to agree on the minimum amount.
Dual track. There it is.
Okay, let's just do a consensus on the minimum bid. Janine?
I'd say do $750.
$750, $500.
$500.
$1,300. I'm happy with $750.
$1,300.
So what, we've got two, two, and two?
Yes, tiebreaker.
Tiebreaker.
Okay, showdown.
Okay, I'd say $500.
Is that three?
Tie.
Well, now it's a tie.
No, it's three, two, two.
Three, two, two.
Yeah, so it's $500.
$500.
$500, yeah, three for five.
Right.
Yeah.
Three for five, all right. At least we have a chance.
Okay, now, all in favor?
No, you took your hand.
It was a motion, right?
Well, we did consensus on the number, that's included in the motion. Motioner and seconder agree. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Well, minimum bid doesn't mean that we're selling it, I mean, that's the starting.
Hey, might not get it.
Right, that's true.
Okay.
All right.
Anything else, Mrs. Gleba?
Yes, sorry. We were supposed to do the professional evaluations in executive session. I wanted to see if council would agree to coming an hour earlier for executive session at the next meeting instead of doing it tonight.
I agree.
I can do that.
Which, not the special section, set the next.
The next scheduled meeting.
Regularly scheduled.
October 4th. I'll be out of town, so.
So you want to do it after that? We really should do an old council.
You could submit your paperwork, at least the.
Your paperwork? I can give you mine.
No, it's not about submitting, it's a matter of discussing. I don't get those, that's your private.
I'm saying that if Mr. Boyle can't make it, he could submit his paperwork, and we could discuss it from there. We may not have your full comments, but.
Well, you know.
I wonder, if you're going to be doing this with a professional, shouldn't you have old council present when you're doing it?
It would be nice, because it might not be feasible.
Would you mind?
Okay, I don't mind doing it, as long as it gets done. October, we've been pushing this out since August.
Yeah.
October 18th, then. I think that's the second meeting in October. Okay, we'll start at 6:30, the executive session. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, then, I was wondering if you or the engineer could research, are there any, with all the FEMA assistance, are there any dollars available to municipalities that might have, you know, say there was damage to a municipal, either road or building, you know, I'm just going to throw out, like, Flow Avenue, because I drive by that. Like, that's one, another, kind of probably like some of these folks, it's a road that all the water flows down, so you can see on the corners, like, a path of flower, it's all.
I'll check.
It's broken, the road's all broken up. So I was wondering if there's federal dollars available for municipalities. I mean, I'm sure there are more damaged areas, not just use that as an example.
I spoke with the OEM coordinator, and the FEMA applications that were being submitted were only eligible for equipment replacement if it was damaged during a storm, expenses from the borough. If I recall correctly, and I can call him tomorrow, I don't remember anything there specifically relating to, like, road damage type thing, but I'll verify that with them, because we're in the process of getting the application together to send it now.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And then.
One second. So that bulk pickup was paid, well, will be paid for by this FEMA?
If we receive the funds, yes. I mean, we're applying for reimbursement from that.
Right.
So.
And our expenses were how much for that?
It was about $8,500.
All right, now this is my last thing, okay? We can look real quick. The final thing is I want to make a motion, I'll just quickly go through the pages, to discuss it at the next meeting, but I'm giving you the information now.
Thank you.
Tying into Councilman Torres, and this has been a beef of mine, you know, improving communications with the residents. And I want to, ultimately, the goal is I'm going to make a motion to have a mass notification system. And on the first slide, I give you the reasons why. Not all residents have access to a computer or regularly visit the Borough Hall or library to read notices. Emergency notifications in a timely manner are essential to keep all citizens and officials informed, prepared, and most importantly, protected. One-time important announcements that can reach all residents with one phone call, such as the recent special bulk garbage pickup after Hurricane Irene. Another reason we need it or could use it is quarterly reminders of the tax bills might improve the tax collection rate and thereby lowering the dollar amount needed for the reserve fund collected taxes. And it would, you know, more efficient, much quicker, and less expensive than multiple mass mailings during the year. The excuse we always get is that we don't have the money for the mailing. So, anyway, I researched one provider.
The reason, not the excuse, the reason.
Exactly. And currently, I know personally, our local schools and sports organizations are utilizing a streamlined communication system. I'm talking fast because we're not doing any voting now or anything. To keep parents informed or to let them know, you know, if school's closing or a bomb threat or anything. So it's time, I think, we do the same for the residents. And I did the research for one particular provider. I'm not saying we have to use this provider. But One Call Now is one that is used locally. And you can, I gave you the website if you want to look at them. And I got a quote from them on what it would cost. And utilizing our demographics, they're approximately 2,120 households and businesses combined. And the prices they gave are broken out by the number of messages. So, for example, 10,000 messages would be about $700. So if you're using 10,000 messages and divide by the 2,000 households, that's approximately 5 messages per year for $700. I'm not saying we need the $100,000. 5 messages might be all we need in case there's an emergency. I'm not saying we have to do a weekly email blast. That's not the purpose of this. This
that
is more.
5 times you can do it if there aren't 2,120 households. You can do it 5 times a year.
Right, and that might be like enough. You know, again, it's just for an emergency or a special announcement.
Way cheaper than postcards.
So
postcards are the cheapest mail. So
and it's green.
Right. So anyway, it included, I give you a whole slide on what's included in that subscription, because you could choose text messaging or email, but again, most people don't have email, and then you have to get permission to use cell phones. So for us, voice messaging is the best. And then other considerations that I was thinking of, I mean, it might be something that the bid might want to have a shared service if they wanted to pay part of it to have, say, 50,000 messages where some of them could be for them to do a reminder of an out, you know. Right, exactly.
Well, not only bid, all our boards could possibly utilize it, actually.
If they wanted to
get into part of it, because they each can have a reason to notify the citizens at one time or another of an event or promotion, like, say, the library board or even the school system or bid or whatever. I mean, one could possibly contribute to this. So that's a really good thing.
So that's something to consider. That. And then also there might be Homeland Security grant funds available to offset the cost of service, because if it's an emergency notification, I think the definition of this service falls under, like, the eligibility requirements. But that's something that could be, looked into. So anyway, the next step is I'd like to make a motion that this be a new business agenda item to discuss at the October 4th meeting.
Second. Any discussion? I'm sorry, John.
Well, yeah. I'd like to see if there are other providers also.
Well, we have until the next meeting to check into that.
So there must be other ones.
Yes, there are.
Well, that's, if you look at the next steps, I mean, after we discuss it at the next meeting, then ideally I'd like it a resolution on the October 18th meeting to make sure that there are 2012 budget dollars, you know, in the 2012 budget. But then we have to go through the proper purchasing procedures. I don't know how you award that service contract. I mean, so whether it goes out to bid, or, you know, like, I don't know how, the dots, it's only $700.
I'll be happy to discuss the purchasing aspect of it.
Right, so, yeah, I'm not saying we have to use this one.
I understood that. I just was wondering if you knew. I think it's a great idea.
Justin, you had something else?
You can add on to the reverse phone call, but you explained that well in here, so. I know 911 center has that, they have emergency, I don't know if they do that for us, but this would be a good idea, and probably do the same thing. That service, that price, the best, and we can't do that. Good job, Mr. Reagan.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Anything else, Mrs. Gleason?
That's it, thank you.
Mr. Boyle?
Thank you, Mayor. Just very quickly, I wanted to special thank you to the Washington Borough Fire Department for allowing Rotary to use the Fletcher Wright Building last Monday for our 9/11 memorial. Had a very good turnout. We had some great speakers there, and it was very, very well received. So thank you to the Washington Borough Fire Department. That's all I have.
Mr. Jewell?
First, I'd like to thank Patrick and the Rotary for putting on. It was excellent, excellent thing. Shimano Dean was there, Robert was there. Excellent presentation and good speakers. I have a couple things, so I'll make it real quick. As far as our diesel and our fueling is concerned, we go to Luke Oil currently, which is a vendor we do deal with. Could we possibly look at other avenues, other vendors in the area that may be able to bring that to us and do a cost relief?
When you say bring it to us?
As far as bringing pricing in, do kind of pricing they may offer other companies in the area.
Well, we're tax exempt, so we pay the state minimum, period. We just contract with them. If we go to another vendor, you still pay the minimum state price because you're exempt from tax.
Each company would charge the same exact price.
There's a minimum price for gasoline, and that's what we pay.
The only concern I have is that these stations in our town are not 24 hours, but, I mean, if there's a way, something happens at DPW something at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they may have a fuel in their truck.
I know that Washington County...
I hate to go outside the borough. I would like to patronize the borough. That business is first.
I understand. I know that Washington Township has been exploring the idea of installing gas and diesel tanks on their facility, which, of course, would be a shared service agreement they would offer to us. I don't know how far along in their discussions they are. I don't know if this was just concept or they were actually doing some legwork on it. I can ask them, but you're kind of limited to, you know, if we don't have our tanks, you're kind of limited to what's out there.
Maybe the possibility of us doing something like that.
Well, the cost to have a gasoline and diesel tank installed is quite expensive, even if you get an above-ground one, which would be the one I'd recommend. Aside from DEP permitting inspections, it's an expense. I mean, easily six figures.
That buy from, say, Sunoco or whatever,
I can explore and see if there's anything more feasible.
Can we check into a shared service agreement with the state? They had the phone so open, you were to get a ARP swipe, and then they send us a bill if they want.
And that's right down the street, too.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right down the street. That's right there. Yeah.
Well, I'll make a phone call.
And last thing I have is for Dick. I know I sent you an email. I don't know if I was clear on what I was asking, but as far as the residence requirements that Governor Christie signed, I believe it was September 1st, 2011, as a hypothetical situation, I understand that if you were previously living out of state, and you're currently an employee of the state of New Jersey, you're a state employee, your grandfather didn't prior to September 1st, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. I'm going to flip that around. What if you were a resident of New Jersey prior to September 1st, decided, okay, I want to move across the river to PA, but I still want to work in New Jersey. Are they still grandfathered in? Is that still the same?
I think they are, Justin. I will double check.
Okay.
But the answer is, I'm pretty sure the people who are already in employment,
right,
they're not. It's only for new people coming on that are influenced. So I think the fact that you move out of state would be no different from an employee who is currently out of state and stays out of state. But I'll double check.
Yeah, you can look into that. I've heard certain arguments. I just want to hear it say legal.
I'm sorry.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Mr. Higgins.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to start out. Dave, what time do you go on the hourly rate? At 11?
I go on at 8:30, Dave.
Yeah, okay. According to your agreement, is it 10:30 or 11?
You know, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, so what do we do?
So tonight it doesn't matter.
Send me home. I'll leave on any of this. And I won't charge you anything.
Well, thank you.
Regardless of the time.
I think it's 11 o'clock, right? Or 10:30 or 11 o'clock.
To be honest with you, Dave, I've never actually enforced that. Not saying that I would then. I'm not waiting to get right time. But I don't remember, to be honest.
Okay. Just so that's in the minutes. All right, listen. Mr. Snyder, please bear with me. I got like a book here. All right, listen. In the paper there, we had the UU settlement called the Vault. And I'm actually looking forward to that because that is a Christian-based organization. I know that there were some concerns about whether or not that's going to attract an element of children that we don't want down here. Listen, I think that any element that a Christian organization can attract is okay.
The last one we had was a Christian organization also.
The last one we had, I think, was the old, where the Habitat for Humanity is right now.
Yes.
And I don't know if that was a Christian organization.
It was run by a priest. I forget which church it was from.
There you go.
Do you think, Councilman Higgins, would it be, because since you're on the bid, like, I never heard of the vault until I read it in the paper as well. And I agree with you that it would be, is there some way, like, the bid, or you could give, like, us a report of stuff
what's
that's
coming up?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
A lot of times, yeah, we can do that, but a lot of times what happens in the bid meeting, the manager says there is, we get the information that it has over.
Oh, okay.
And so does the mayor.
All right.
Although in this case, it was at one of the meetings, they said there is a coming attraction.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no problem. Okay, first weekend in October is the festival in the borough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just putting that out there to remind everybody. On the executive session for the meeting of August the 6th, when Councilman Jewell and myself were asked to leave for the executive session, that was an erroneous for us to leave. That had nothing to do with the fire department. That had to do with a member of the fire department. That had nothing absolutely to do with the fire department. Just to point that out.
That wouldn't make any difference, Dave, in my opinion.
Well, that was not a fire department class. That wasn't a fire department suit. That was an individual on the fire department. If that's the case, then the discussion about the previous council member, Mrs. Lee should have left.
Refresh my recollection. The individual...
Why should I have left?
I'm just saying, I mean, if they want to explain
that, I would like to.
Yeah, I would like to. Oh, I wasn't there. I withdraw all my comments.
You withdraw?
No, I don't. Was I at the meeting?
No.
It was an individual on the fire department, but not the fire department.
I don't know. I'd have to take a look.
Okay.
I wasn't at the meeting. I'm not.
I put that out there that we should not have been asked to leave that meeting.
So why should I have, why would I have to be?
What I'm saying is, because the person that you were talking about represented you during one of your election drives. You had contacted that individual to help you get elected. I'll explain to you afterwards if you want me to.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Who televises our sewer line?
We do.
We do. Who's we?
We, the sewer department. The
sewer department. They keep dates?
Yes, when they televise.
Are they public information?
Are sewer line pictures televised?
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if they record every single thing. Sometimes it's just looking at the line.
Okay. But they have a record of what was done and when it was done.
Yeah, they should.
Okay, let's see here.
David, just while I'm thinking about this, what Veolia does as a contracting party wouldn't necessarily be a public document.
Well, wait a second. Are they doing it on behalf of the borough?
If we get it, then
if we ask
I don't know if they get it or not.
If
we ask them to do it, and they're doing it on our behalf, correct?
You mean if we say we have a problem with a sewer line, can you inspect it?
Yeah.
That type of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
if we ask them to do it,
okay.
They do inspect the
I
line, but they don't always report it.
I can't imagine why we'd care, anybody cares,
okay.
To prevent
really
somebody looking at that. I'm sure
okay, just a reminder that Route 31, the traffic is going to be redirected. It's going to go down to two lanes, one lane each way. So if you could contact Chief McDonald, because everybody's going to be coming up Broad Street to get around the traffic jam there and so forth up there. I'm not saying set up a speed trap and have some cops there to monitor what goes on because it's a high accident area. Okay, let's see here. Stephanie Lewis's letter with the new cost for the
connection fees.
For a commercial property. I mean, for, you know, let me see, I have the letter's dated February 12th, and we just got it.
That's not correct. I responded to Councilwoman Galiba's email if she asked if I could forward it to her again.
Yeah,
this was provided
you.
To council, or I copied right. everyone. This was right. provided in February when she came right. up with her calculations.
Okay.
Well, we didn't get it in February, though.
Well, you had to, because you approved the changes.
No, no, not that whole packet. We just got the resolution with the dollar amount.
I'd have to go back and check February.
That's why I requested it, because I didn't have it.
No, you if I recall correctly, you requested it because we finally got the signed payment voucher on it. Because, in fact, when
right,
I sent it to you...
Right, because I had never seen anything
no, no,
on
when
it.
When I sent
resolution.
It to you, you said that was the stuff you already had.
Because I had requested that one piece a couple of, like, 2 months ago. But it was only one piece that I got the last time, so I didn't get that whole packet of information before.
All right. Since we're not going to be plowing any private roads, can we take the stop signs down in between Broad Street and South Lincoln Avenue and put them over on Lambert Street?
Well, in order to put them on Lambert Street, we need to introduce and adopt an ordinance.
Okay, what are we going to do?
But that's the council's, I mean...
All right, I'm not
now's the time. I'd have to have Andrew draft the ordinance.
Yes, thank you for a voice record. Okay. All right. Janine, great questions about the bulk pickup. I read your questions. I read the response. I'm not real clear on the response itself. Your question was that the funds are coming from. No, that was the response. The one-time bulk pickup. Is it costing any tax dollars? No. Anyway, the bottom line is, where did they come from, and what did we approve for them to come from? I mean, you put it here that the council, it's coming from the current fund, and the council already approved it.
What are we talking? I apologize.
Remember when I was asking about that special bulk garbage?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Where did the?
It's coming from the budget that council already approved.
And
well,
the and
part of the budget.
The collection and disposal.
Of the contract that we had with
Blue Diamond.
With Blue Diamond.
Correct.
Okay, so you said that's about $8,500.
Correct.
Okay. But in your email, you said you're cutting costs in other places.
Correct. It actually worked out well because the amount of disposal costs this year has dropped. So I didn't at the time when I sent that email, I didn't know what the cost was. I was expecting a $20,000 bill, not an $8,000 bill. What's
so
the date on my email?
Where we were going to get to
the...
All right.
The eight.
Now I'm really...
No, no.
It cost us $8,500, but you were expecting a $20,000 bill. So
correct.
If that was what we saved in the contract with the trash collection, why are we paying for the contract?
I'm not sure what you mean when you say, is that what we saved? I was expecting a $20,000 bill, which would have required cuts in other departments in order to pay for this. When the bill came in at $8,000, I was pleased to see that there was enough money left in the current collection and disposal line items to pay for it.
Okay, but...
The date of my email was prior to the collection date.
But he's saying if there's still $8,000 left for the budget item for garbage, why are we paying that much for... Why do we have... He's saying the budget item should not be so high then. If you have extra money...
It was over
we
budget that line.
Collection fees are always a guess. You never know who's going to dump what.
No, I'm just trying to clarify
what
you're
No, the collection fees this year have been lower than we budgeted for. That's why there was extra money in it without having to make cuts from other departments.
Okay.
I didn't know what the cost was until the day after the collection.
Okay, so in November or December, we're not going to have to transfer any money to cover the cost.
No.
Or put any money into... the garbage collection because we're short there.
Not unless people start dumping everything between now and November that we have to pick up. Collection costs, the tipping fees have actually been a little bit lower than we projected.
Can you tell us how much it was?
Not off the top of my head.
Are you saying $500,000? Huh. Wow. Okay. I think that's all.
Can I
go
back
to one? There's going to be a sewer meeting on October 17th.
Can I ask the attorney real quick since you're here? just because the audience member was the one that questioned us publicizing the box tops on the website, and could, maybe you could share the reasoning why we're not able to put it on the borough municipal website.
What happens is there is a thing called a public forum, which means that when a municipality or some other government agency opens up its either billboards or bulletin boards, I should say, bulletin boards or things like that for public discussion, you then can't limit the content of anything that goes on there. And we had a problem in the borough many years ago. The library had a little bulletin board outside one of the doors. And for years and years, people would put up things about garage sales or what was going on in the community. And, you know, it was kind of like, okay, this is a community bulletin board, and let's use it for community type of things. Well, when there was going to be a march on Washington having to do with abortion, a group that I think was opposing abortion or in favor of abortion, I forgot exactly which side they were on, but they came and put a poster up in the borough library bulletin area. And the librarians took it down. They said, oh, that's kind of controversial. That's not really what this is meant for. This is meant for community type of activities and garage sales and things that really relate to the borough of Washington. Oh, the Rutherford Institute, which is this rights group out of Washington, had a suit down in federal court within about a week, and they said, you're violating our First Amendment rights, and you've got to let us put up our poster immediately. We had an order to show cause before the federal judge, and we want $10,000 or $15,000 in our attorney's fees because you violated our First Amendment rights, okay, by limiting the content of speech. The First Amendment says free speech. Government has no way of limiting free speech, or for the most part has no way. So the concern that I've had, and most municipal attorneys have since that time, or not just since that time, a concern that they have, is that if you start opening up avenues of communication that the borough has, for instance, its website, to persons who are really outside agencies, you have a whole bunch of possible problems. Number one, if somebody else comes along and says, all right, I don't want to advertise box tops, but I want to advertise the abortion issue, pro, con, who knows what, and I want to put it on your website, and you allowed the box tops people to have their information on there, but you won't allow me, you're discriminating against me. The second thing is that the borough policy, as I understand it anyway, has always been to try to discourage any type of commercial use of that, to keep it segregated just in terms of borough type of activities. The box top thing is it's a great thing for the schools because it generates money for the schools by community effort, so it's a good thing. It's really run by Kellogg or whoever runs it for their own purposes, so it's really a sort of a commercial type of operation. It gives money to schools, but at the basis of it, it's a commercial operation. And the problem is, once you open these doors, it's very difficult to close them. So we've always taken a very conservative approach in that regard to sort of say, let's limit it really for its core function, not open it up to these other things. And there's a third problem, which is it's more of a theoretical problem, at least from my understanding anyway. When you put somebody else's links on there, you potentially have a problem where what happens when people link together and there's some complication as a result of that. So we always give a very conservative approach, which is no. And that was the advice that we gave. So that was the background.
If I wanted to save on box tops, I should just go to the school and ask them if they want them or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the school?
Yes, most of them.
And the school kind of, I think, promotes it through handouts.
Yeah, flyers that go home.
Flyers and so forth. So, you know, yeah, that would be the best place to do it.
And as I remember back in the 80s, they had a big thing with Shopper with pink receipts. They had pink receipts that happened 2 weeks. At the time, that was a big computer. But,
yeah.
And same thing, people would just bring it right to school.
Yep.
You know, same scenario in the 80s.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else under council remarks? Hearing none, I would accept a motion for resolution 159-2011 after a five-minute break. And the reasons are pending or anticipated litigation and matters involving employment.